across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
It was there in the news a moment ago, and I was listening to Christo at lunchtime today, great show, and he was talking about it, and I think Jamie touched on it as well in the afternoon. But I have my own take on this story about supermarket carrier bags. And one afternoon on this radio station, not that long ago, I just touched on what I suppose is amounts to a conspiracy theory, except I genuinely believe that this particular conspiracy has taken place and is continuing to take place. And it's quite simply this. About 5 or 6 years ago, all of the middle-class tabloid newspapers got together and agreed on one thing, that supermarket carrier bags are bad for the planet. All the packaging that goes around cucumbers and broccoli and all the rest of the plastic packaging, which absolutely consumes almost everything we buy, that doesn't matter. No, it's the supermarket carrier bags that are the enemy of wildlife, of the seas, of the streets. We've got to get rid of plastic. Don't worry about bin liners, which are made of the same sort of stuff and which we put our food in before we put it in the wheelie bin, when really you could just put it in the wheelie bin. They don't matter. It's carrier bags. It's supermarket carrier bags. So I got thinking about this, and I got thinking, supposing supermarkets found that it would be quite useful from the point of view of their profit margins if they didn't have to give out so many free supermarket carrier bags to every single customer who turns up at the shop. Hayley's here and Sam's here. I'm going to give you 3 seconds, Hayley, to estimate roughly how many supermarket carrier bags Britain's leading supermarket used to give away for free per year before the 5p charge came in. Have a guess.
Must be millions. Millions, 20 eh? Million.
20 million. Sam, more or less than 20 million, Sam?
I was going more. I was going to go into a billion is what I was thinking.
What's a billion again?
Nine zeros?
Nine zeros. Okay. Now, I can't get this information because I've been researching this and it's going to be in my next book on conspiracy theories. I couldn't get the exact number of supermarket carrier bags that Britain's leading supermarket chain gave away for free of charge, even though it cost them to buy them and distribute them to their stores. So I had to do my own calculation. So, guys, again, roughly, how many supermarket carrier bags do you think they used to be handing out free of charge at each till per minute?
Ooh.
When the till is up and running?
10,000?
No, each till, separate till.
Oh, each separate till.
You
per
go
minute?
Through
oh, about gosh. I'd say 12. Because if you think
12.
Of an average shop.
You reckon 12 bags per minute?
Well,
your average till.
Yeah, five
it takes
five or
3
six.
Minutes to go through. 5 or 6. Sam, what would you guess?
Yeah, four.
Four.
Four, 3 or 4.
Well, I've been conservative on this one, and I've gone for 3 bags per minute, okay? Which is 1,800 per hour, all right? And if there's 10 tills in a supermarket, that's 18,000 carrier bags per day the supermarkets were paying for, all right? Any idea how many supermarket shops there are owned by and run by Britain's largest supermarket chain?
The Big Four, as they call it.
The big one. The one who's
the
biggest
okay.
of them all. I'm not going to use the name, even though it's pretty obvious what I'm talking about. But
yeah. Sam, go first. Because I've been going first, so I could get it wrong.
How many shops does the biggest supermarket chain in this country run?
I'll go for about 300.
300. 6,550.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And do you know what, just as an aside, do you know what's interesting about each of those shops? We tend to think there's a lot of money in professional football, don't we? Apparently, each one of those superstores turns over more money than Manchester United in the course of a year.
No way, really?
That's how much cash there is in supermarkets.
Well, we all have to eat, don't we?
Sam, you got a calculator to hand?
Yep.
I need you to multiply 6,570,000, which
easy.
Is the number of supermarket carrier bags it appears that each shop is giving away every year, by the number of shops that there are, which is 6,500. Can you do that? 6,570,000 per shop times 6,500, which is the number of shops this supermarket chain has. And you haven't got space on your screen for it, have you?
I've not, no, so I'm going to try it on the computer.
Exactly.
It's a lot of digits.
It's a lot of digits, and it's costing them. That's just my point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so give me the game. So 6 million...
6,570,000 per year, per shop.
Multiply by...
I think my maths are right. By 6,500, which is how many shops they have, retail outlets they have. And again, you know, some of those are corner shops, which would be would have been giving away fewer supermarket carrier bags. But we've been conservative in our estimate of how many bags were given away per minute per till. And then how many noughts, Sam?
So that is 42.7
billion. 42.7
billion
wow.
Carrier bags. How much does a carrier bag cost if you buy in bulk?
I'd guess at like half a p. Like
that's
really
what I've
nothing.
Gone for.
Yeah.
Half a p. It might be even less than that, but not a lot less than that. If you buy 50,000 of them, they cost you over a penny. And obviously the supermarkets were buying in unbelievable quantities. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about one of the big stories of the day, which is that the cost of buying a carrier bag from your supermarket is going to go up from 5p to 10p soon, basically. And what I'm here to say is that I don't think the story that these supermarket carrier bags are being leaned on so heavily is because they're an ecological problem. I think in part, or maybe in full, they're a financial problem to the supermarkets. And here's what I've got to back that up, OK? In the financial year 2014 to 2015, which was the year before the 5p price was introduced, this supermarket chain, the UK's largest, posted a profit of 498 million. The following year, 2015 to 2016, OK, and the charge came in towards the end of that year, they made another profit of approximately 500 million. 2014, it was 498 million. 2015, it was 503 million. All around about the 500 million mark. Mm. The following year, when they made a saving of over £214 million because they weren't giving away free supermarket carrier bags, their profits went up to £803 million. For no apparent reason. Their sales numbers were the same. Their overheads, apart from supermarket carrier bags, were the same. But their profits jumped by roughly the amount that they would have saved on buying and giving away free carrier bags. That was the largest supermarket in the UK. The second largest, more or less the same. Begins with S. In 2015, they made a loss of 166 million. After the supermarket carrier bag 5p charge was introduced, by 2017, they made a profit of 377 million.
I just figured out why.
Go on then.
And it's something you said earlier. Because people are buying less because they're only buying what they can carry without a bag?
No, it's that the supermarkets don't have to spend so much money on free carrier bags.
Yeah, but people are spending less in store because they're only buying what they can carry out.
No, because their sales are the same. Throughout the 3 years, 2015, 2016 and 2017, their sales revenue is the same. They're selling the same amount of goods, but their profits suddenly shot up by around about 200 million, each of them. Now, how does each supermarket do its donation to charity of the 5p that you pay if you buy a supermarket carrier bag? OK, well, according to a report which came out straight after the 5p price hike was introduced, each supermarket donates per bag in a very different way. And I will mention the names because these are facts. Asda, Morrisons and Waitrose donate all funds minus VAT, or they donate 4.16p a bag to charity. Tesco donate just 5p as it subtracted the cost of administering the bag scheme. OK, so that's in there. Now, supposing you're a supermarket chain And you don't want to give away so many free carrier bags because it is crimping your profit margins. How are you going to do that? Can the supermarkets possibly go to the middle-class tabloid newspapers and say, excuse me, would you possibly run a scare story about supermarket carrier bags screwing up the planet? Mm. Well, why would the papers do that? It's not. It might not be true. Papers wouldn't publish something that wasn't entirely true, would
never,
they?
Never.
Unless, of course, supermarkets are amongst their main advertisers. Now, would you like to guess, all right, how many of the major supermarkets feature in the top 10, top 20, let's go top 20, advertisers in British middle-class tabloid newspapers?
All of them.
Every day.
Yeah.
BT's top, they spend the most. Sky next. Tesco comes in at number 4. Lidl comes in at number 5. Mm. Asda comes in at number 6. M&S is there at number 10. And then you've got Sainsbury's at 18, the Co-op at 19, Iceland Frozen Foods at 20. So by a distance, the supermarkets are the main advertisers of newspapers. Might the supermarkets have got together and said to the newspapers, we'll carry on spending all this money on you if you'll just help us out with one tiny little tweaky thing? Surely not. Surely this country is too shot through with integrity from top to bottom for any such outrage to even have been considered by our Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron. A Prime Minister whose campaign to become leader of the Conservative Party was underwritten by Lord Sainsbury. Now, as conspiracy theories go, this simply isn't good enough for Howard Hughes. Is it? Because he's more up there with the, whoa, the moon landings and whoa, Kennedy and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know, proper, big stuff, conspiracy theories. But I rest my case. For me, as a humble member of the public, who sometimes has been seen staggering across the car park on a windy, rainy day to his car from the supermarket, carrying 8 or 9 or 10 things that I'm just too tight to buy a carrier bag for, okay? Spilling them as I go before I dump them onto the back seat, cursing, all right? For me, it is a lockdown of a conspiracy theory. I rest my case. What do you think, Hayley?
I think that's very plausible, actually.
I've done the business.
Done the maths.
Sam, marks out of 10 for that as a possible, genuine conspiracy theory.
He's on the phone.
The phones are ringing. Remind us of the number, Hayley.
0344 499 1000
is the number. And to text us.
87222. Text costs 25p plus your standard network rate.
And what are the means now that social media is across us like the proverbial rash?
You can tweet us at Talk Radio.
I had a rash over Christmas, but it never comes out on your face, so you don't get any sympathy. It just sort of comes on your shoulders there, and then it's gone. Yeah, on the neck.
Yeah,
a little bit.
You're wearing a polo neck, so I couldn't see.
Exactly. I went to the doctor's once, and he said, you've got a rash. And that was it. Anyhow, you may contact us if you have any reaction. I doubt whether you do, because, quite frankly, my whitewashing of the supermarket conspiracy theory was so fulsome, so thorough, so wall-to-wall, so, you know, you just couldn't fight it, that I can't imagine that you can either add, and you certainly can't subtract from what I've had to say. Sam was on the line and on the phone when we went to him for his marks on the conspiracy theory. He was talking to Paul, I believe, who was our first caller this evening. Hello, Paul.
Hello, is that Tommy?
Speaking.
Right, yeah. A friend of mine called Steve John B. put me on to you guys. I'm an actor, professional actor, trained at Webber Douglas back in the day. And I've got a movie that I've just written called A Shot of Passion, an American feature film that I'm trying to promote as well. Anyway, I've got a YouTube channel, and Sleep John B. suggested I come on and talk to you about my channel, just about the movie, but my channel as well.
Did you say Webber Douglas?
Webber Douglas Academy. Don't tell me you went there, did you?
Ha! RADA.
You went to RADA? Oh, well, they're all
Webber Douglas.
They weren't.
RADA is... Sorry, mate. RAD is the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. Webber Douglas? No, you know, I'm not going to cast aspersions.
Well, there were about 10 or 11 of them that are all in the same bracket in terms of Lambda, Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, Webber Douglas Central School of Speech and Debate, about 10 or 11 of them, I thought, all on the same level.
What did you do for your audition to get into Webber Douglas?
I find that's going back some time now, Tommy.
Yeah, but you must remember. What did you do? Was it a piece of Shakespeare and a piece of modern?
That's right. That's precisely what we did. Yeah.
Come on, what did you do? What was your Shakespeare? Come on.
Mind you, I did it badly then. It was all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. But that was back then.
And you got in on that. you got in on that indifferent tossing away of Shakespeare. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. Da di da di da di da.
But back in the day, they asked me to sing. I attempted to sing Silent Night, and I'm not a singer. And how I got in is beyond me. I think I was told that you've got to have a certain look. You've got to have some talent, but there's a look that goes with the talent, and they go on that. This is what I was told. I'm not sure.
It's a cattle market, isn't it?
It is a bit of a cattle market, and you know what I feel sorry for? I feel sorry for those actors who go in and they get put on a pedestal when they're there, and they come out and they fall flat because there's such a distance to fall psychologically when you've been on that pedestal within that protected environment.
Do you know, that's the first use of pedestal I've ever heard that wasn't referring to doctors.
Well,
but the other thing is, and Hayley will be able to do this for us, where could you get a pedestal?
Where could you get them?
Yeah, do they do them in IKEA?
Probably, or Argos as well, I reckon.
You can't get a pedestal.
B&Q, and B&Q as well. Do you want a key with it as well?
I don't think it's possible to buy a pedestal.
Why not?
Because they're not sold. What is a pedestal?
There's ones in the offices out there. There's one where we were just sitting. Yes, there is. I will take you out during the break and show you a pedestal.
I'm not being taken out anyway.
You were just sitting next to a pedestal.
Out, mate, I'll tell you, I'm from Hounslow. You wouldn't last 30 seconds. What is a pedestal then? A high chair?
No, a little cupboard with two drawers.
No,
and
it isn't.
A key
it's a high
top.
Chair. What are you talking
no,
about?
No, a pedestal. It's a pedestal cupboard.
Paul, I'll let you settle this. Do it in your most Shakespearean way,
Paul.
Though. Bring authority to it and dignity. Who's right? Exactly. What is a pedestal?
Well, a pedestal.
You started it.
Well, a pedestal, as far as I'm concerned, isn't that like a small step ladder with two steps? Or it could be just one of those round, movable sort of...
Exactly.
No.
None of us know what a pedestal is, but we all know that doctors are on one.
Well, they seem to
Hayley's
be...
Hayley's researching it.
We've got to listen to those guys, though, haven't we? Because they're the ones who keep us in one piece. What can you do?
Paul, thank you for your, I presume, one of your first calls to Talk Radio, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime. Thank you for that, mate, and good luck with your channel.
Google says I was right, by the way.
Okay, so I'm looking at Hayley's laptop front, and it shows a filing cabinet on casters.
A cupboard, yeah, a cupboard with drawers in
it. Well, why do people say that doctors put themselves on a pedestal then? Why would it be an insult to say that a doctor is on a filing cabinet with caster feet? It's all wrong, Hayley.
Yeah, and you can buy them in all good furniture shops.
OK, how much?
This one's £60. It's quite a lot, isn't it?
The station is... Well, you know what the station is, and I am also... I'll identify myself. My name's Tom Boyd. Hayley is here and Sam is here. And we're going to have fun between now and 1 o'clock, when we think the fun will be continued by Paul Ross.
Yep.
At the moment, we've been talking a little bit about supermarket carrier bags, but we found ourselves beautifully deflected by Paul, who called in to plug his YouTube channel and his as-yet-unshot film script, and the fact that he himself is a former, or indeed, given the chance, acting actor.
Darling.
Exactly. We're also going to be talking about things like... what's been the greatest victory that anybody's had this year? And it's not necessarily winning the Premier League or Strictly Come Dancing. Victories come in many shapes and forms and sizes. What else? Oh, Christmas Swap Shop.
Yes.
Now, this was Hayley's idea. So just ahead of some very important announcements which are going to be made about some things that you ought to buy. Don't know if I can say that about commercials, but anyway. Hayley is going to plug her idea.
Yeah, so I got something for Christmas that is... awful, but in a funny way. And I honestly would like to swap it for something that might be a little bit more, you know, good, for want of a better word.
And that lies ahead.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Now, whilst I was listening to those important messages, and I hope you were listening properly at home or wherever you are, I was also explaining to Hayley that the hungrier you are, within reason, the more intelligent you are. Because if you've got a full stomach, a lot of your blood is diverted to your digestive system to help you with your digestion, thus depriving the brain and your nervous system of some of the much-needed oxygen.
So that's where I'm going wrong.
So if, yeah, for example, if you were to come to air having just had, you know, three dinners, then the show might be marginally fuzzier. Don't look at me like that. And by the way, you were wrong about a pedestal. It is not a filing cabinet on wheels.
Google was right. You can't say that Google's wrong.
Early on the programme, a caller called in called Paul, who said that actors were put on pedestals, and I asked him what it was, and he didn't know what a pedestal was, and nor did I. So Hayley looked it up, but you got the wrong pedestal.
That's convenient, isn't it?
It is. Shall I show you what a real pedestal is? Because I was able to Google a proper pedestal whilst you were...
Ah, but you've got a different word in there. What have you got in your search box?
Pedestal?
No. Hang on. I need to shift.
All right, I'm now showing... Sorry about this at home. It's really frustrating. But
no, you've got statue base.
Yes, that's because that's what a pedestal is.
That doesn't even look like pedestal. It doesn't even start with the same letter.
Well, look, come back here. I won't continue with this for very long. It's dead dreadful radio. What does the fourth image say?
Pedestal statue sculpture.
A pedestal, in this idiom, refers to the base on which a statue stands. So, for example, Nelson's Column is a big pedestal.
But the key is that's a point there that you said in this idiom.
Yes.
So there's different variants of pedestals. You've typed in a different search term. No wonder you got up a different result.
No, I typed in pedestal and it said dictionary definition of a pedestal, a statue base. So I put in statue base in order to get some images. And that's what I got.
Well, you can't get one of them in IKEA.
Remind the gentle listener of the ways in which they can, should they choose, to wake themselves from their torpor, can contact the show.
Oh, we'd love you to give us a call on 0344 499 1000. You can text 87222. Text costs 25p plus your standard network rate. Or you could tweet us on @talkradio.
OK. Kyle Rickards has text... Oh, I beg your pardon, tweet.
The blue ones are tweets, the pink ones are texts.
Thank you. I've got a screen in front of me which is multicolour. Why don't supermarkets let people have paper bags for groceries like Ireland did? The bag charge is just to make a profit. There is something infinitely more romantic and sexier about going to an American supermarket where you get those tall paper, brown paper bags to put your groceries in, which... if you're in a movie, they have to have a French stick sticking out of them. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for that one. Kyle, Valerie Bossman, every generation faces the unknown. Not one of us can predict the future accurately. Well, I did this afternoon because the Tizard horse came in the Welsh National at a very juicy 3-1. It was like finding money in the street. There was no way it was going to get beaten. And I had my feet up and wondering what I'm going to do with a spare 100 quid from around about 4 out. So, yes, you can predict the future accurately sometimes. Hedy has tweeted, a pedestal is a small marble Greek column suitable for placing urns or young ladies with nice legs. You're drifting here, Hedy. Come back onto the point. Obtainable from a pedestal peddler.
Rubbish.
The trouble is... you need a dais and I. Okay? It's a tweet so that we don't get the full thing. Brilliant surprise to hear you again, Tommy. I used to listen to you in the mid-90s working as an Apple Mac op. Oh, he was working as an Apple Mac op, yes. And I'm wide awake. Cool mungus, thank you. So, one of Hayley's many excellent suggestions for the show, because as a producer it's incumbent on her to come up with ideas and execute them or help
try to
facilitate them. is to see whether anybody else got a rubbish Christmas present that they're desperate to get shot of.
Right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's quite sublime.
I haven't seen this yet.
No. Sam has.
We've been here for 3 hours at Talk Radio. This is fascinating.
So, it's a cuddly toy, right? It's a flamingo. It's a ballerina. It's a cuddly toy. It's a fluffy ballerina with a tutu. It's got ballet shoes on. It's got a little pearl necklace. It's got a crown. But the piece de resistance, if I press the button... It's bilingual. It sings Chinese too.
I think it's bi a lot of things. I'm going to say this, dear listener, and to you, Hayley, that is so bad it's actually quite good. Do you know what I mean? Is Keech the word?
Sort of, maybe.
Do you know Keech?
Yeah,
we had Keech. Before we had Bling, we had Keech. And Keech was something that was just so grotesque and ridiculous that it had a place. Who gave it to you? Are you allowed
to say?
My
friend. She's actually a friend, would you believe it or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the hidden message?
So she got it off an English website, mm-hmm. and then when it arrived, it just sang Chinese to her.
Okay. I want to do something that's a bit visual, so I can only do this if Sam is prepared to come into the studio for 2 minutes and vacate. Can you leave the desk on autopilot?
Yeah.
And come on through for a second. Hayley has offered you, good listener, if you care to swap, what she considers to be the most appalling Christmas present of the year, which is, it's about a foot high, and it's quite svelte, and it is a pink flamingo. Sam, what I'm going to get you to do is just close your eyes
right.
now that you're in the studio. And you're in the studio with myself, dressed as usual as the milk tray man, and Hayley, who is attired as she is. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask Hayley to stand up and hold the pink flamingo, complete with its pearl necklace and its dainty shoes with bows.
They're ballet shoes. Ballet slippers.
And I'm going to ask you to look at the two of them, Sam,
mm-hmm.
and tell me what's the first thought that you have. Ready, one, two, three, open your eyes. Hayley and the flamingo and Hayley.
I couldn't really see the flamingo because it blends in very well with
the outfit.
Identical?
Yes, more or less.
Completely identical?
Yeah.
Were you aware of this?
No, I didn't think I looked like a flamingo, do
I'm
I?
I'm not saying you look like a flamingo. I'm just saying that your outfit, which is pure pink, with some nice sequined patterns on the pink top and your pink shoes with bows... is almost a perfect match. Your friend is paying you a magnificent compliment.
Do you think?
Yes, because not only is this pink flamingo kind of cute, kind of recherche, but it's also a bit wacky and zany. Play its noise again.
I hope it's nothing rude in Chinese. I do apologise now if it is.
OK, you can stop it now. Well, I'm going to tell you, good listener, that I honestly think that Hayley's friend has found for her the most appropriate present I've seen ever.
Oh, really?
It is the most on-the-nose Christmas present I have ever seen anybody given. That flamingo and you are two peas in a pod.
Plus, like, you know, everyone who knows you're obsessed with the colour pink, so it's...
Yeah, but singing Chinese.
It's different.
How do you know it's Chinese?
Well, or Vietnamese, maybe, or Thai.
Careful.
It's from that part of the world. It's
careful.
It's in the east. I'm just saying it's in the east.
I'm just saying be very careful. Anyway, if you would like to swap, if you receive,
please.
Dear listener, a Christmas present that you consider to be one that you need to get rid of as quickly as possible, and you want to swap it for a pink flamingo that sings in Chinese, then this is the telephone number and this is the text.
Please, 0344 499 1000, text 87222. Please. I'm actually begging you here, actually. Just because I genuinely would like to swap it.
OK, Roger has a tweet. You're wrong, Mr Boyd. You can buy pedestals.
Yes. Thank you, Roger.
Hayley Hayes was right.
Oh, of course I was.
No, you can't buy pedestals that are proper pedestals. You can only buy pedestals, which is a sort of a distorted concept of the pedestal that Hayley thought was a pedestal. The show that just keeps on giving, this is Mike... Is it? Or is it Mike Graham talking about his show? Well done, Mike. I'm sure your ratings are through the roof. It's a late tweet.
That was 10 hours ago. I was at 10 o'clock
this
morning.
When I say a late tweet, I don't mean a deceased tweet. How are you doing at home? Are you all right? I'll just have a word with you now. Hayley, you can go about your clacking on the keyboard. And Sam, you can line up the next commercial breaks and everything. I'll just have a quick word with the listener. Where are we? If you bother about Christmas, you're about halfway through, because it goes through, doesn't it, until about December the 30th / 31st, when we start to think about the new year and going back to work and going back to school or whatever. But here's the question we were having around the breakfast table this morning in my house. And I will pass it on. And I mean well in every aspect of it, OK? So don't think I'm being in any way impish. Everybody now says, even though they love Christmas, that Christmas is getting too commercial. It's more commercial than it was when I was a boy. It starts too soon, and it's all about presents and parties, and we've forgotten the true Christmas message. But what I was asking my folks down the breakfast table is, in India, say, do the older Indian people say the same thing about Diwali? Do they sit around going, Diwali's not what it was? It's too commercial now.
And it goes on forever.
It goes on forever. It starts too soon. And, you know, do Muslims sit around, older Muslims sit around going, you know, Ramadan is not what it was. It's got commercial. The kids of today don't know how to do it properly. They're missing the whole message, you know? And Jewish people.
Yeah.
Tell me, I mean, do Jewish people around about the time of...
Christmas?
No.
Hanukkah. Hanukkah's about 2 weeks before Christmas.
Okay.
So we're quite lucky, so we get to celebrate twice. Or I do, anyway.
Well, there's that. But do traditional conservative Jewish people mutter to each other that the kids of today are missing the point of Hanukkah, and it's too commercial, and it starts too soon, and, you know, and there's candles in the shops now in October?
Yeah.
I'm asking the question.
No, it's true. No, I hear it from my family, my older generation in my family. Yeah, no, they do.
Now, at one point during our production meeting, before we came on air, you used a phrase and I had to ask you what it meant.
Oh, schluff.
Yes, which is what?
It's Yiddish for sleep, or a little nap, little sleep.
So you said that in between doing your day job and producing Ian Lee, you would go home for a little...
Schluff.
Schluff. And I said, that's beautiful, what is it? And you said...
A little sleep.
In Yiddish?
Nap. Yeah, in Yiddish, yeah.
Which
is
practically a complete language, isn't it? But it's unofficial.
I only know the odd word, though.
It's not like Hebrew, which is a proper
language. That's a proper language.
Yes,
yeah,
it
yeah.
is. Yiddish
That's
is
why it's called
of,
ish, isn't it?
Yiddish is not like Cockney rhyming slang or, you know, the idiosyncrasies of the Mersey sound or the Tyne sound. But what we thought we'd do is I would bring in tomorrow a book that I happen to have of translations from Yiddish to English and English to Yiddish and test you.
And I'll do the same with you with Cockney, so it's fair.
Yeah.
So we both get a little bit of a test.
And to be doubly fair, I have to say I'm not a Cockney, but I'm sort of just the edge of southwest London. But I do tend to walk with a waddle when I get to Hammersmith, so I'll take that one.
Your pass.
Cool. Okay. So no turkeys so far, Hayley, for your
flamingo. No one wants
flamingo.
My flamingo.
This evening on the show, we're discussing a range of topics. Hayley has come up with quite a few ideas that are definitely worth your consideration, good listener. And if I can find them on my machine in front of me, I'll quickly run through them so that you can get some idea of what a crazy packed programme...
It could be.
It could be. On the other hand, we might just shoot the breeze. I'm now opening window after window after window. Do you find that, listener, when you get to your laptop, to find the thing that you want, you've got to go from one window to another to another to another?
Do you need help?
Hayley wonders whether you have any tin of food in your larder that has been there for far too long, but you don't want to get rid of it.
Or how old is the oldest piece of food that you have? I actually looked. I had tea. I had some tea bags. So it's not quite a tin, but it doesn't matter. I had some tea bags from 1999, I think.
We don't want to throw them away, do we?
No, well, I did, though, because I felt like they possibly would be poisonous. I Googled it, though. I Googled, could you have old tea bags? And it said yes.
But we don't like throwing food away. Who likes throwing food away?
Awful.
I've got a bag of couscous in the larder.
That's
we
so
don't know how
class.
To cook it, and I'm glad I don't know how to cook it, because that means I never will cook it, but I can't throw it away. You know?
Yeah.
What else? Oh, the oldest pair of socks.
Yeah, because I think that also says something about you. How many holes do you need in a pair of socks before you throw them away?
I don't get holes in socks anymore, do you? Really?
Hmm.
Let's remind ourselves of the telephone number, if you, good listener, would care to give us a moment of your time and your wisdom.
Oh, 0344 499 1000.
Yeah, and then a few important messages, and then I'll tell you something about men's underpants, Hayley, that I know you don't know.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We'll come to the promised information about men's underpants, which I don't think any women are fully aware of at all, immediately after we've had a word with our next caller, who is Rob. Hi, Rob.
Oh, hi, Tommy. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. You?
Yeah, absolutely. And the subject of men's underpants has just sort of made me a little bit more excited. I was going to suggest that you liven things up a little bit, because I liked... First of all, welcome back. It was great to hear you, and I'm a big fan of yours. But the plastic bags things didn't excite me that much.
No, but it's a news story, and, you know, kind of...
Fair enough and everything, but... I'm wondering, really, whether you could tell us a little bit about what you've been up to for the past decade since you left Talk Radio.
Decade?
I haven't been keeping total tabs on you, but...
Nor have I.
I missed you. I loved your show years ago.
I'm not quite sure. Blackouts. There's a lot of pieces... there's a lot of bits that I don't know.
Come on.
Frankly. No, I've been keeping myself busy doing something that I can't talk about.
Could I find it somewhere?
No, it's not on the internet at all. And I don't tweet, and I haven't got Facebook, and I'm completely anonymous. In fact, it took this radio station nearly 2 years to find me.
Tommy, I respect you, that privacy, and I'm absolutely happy that that you're doing things.
Oh, but you don't know why I need the privacy. It's not to do with me. It's to do with the other job that I do, and that's all I'm going to say. Otherwise, it'll get people, you know, and they'll start, you know, and I don't want that. So, but thank you for asking.
You always struck me as someone that was really happy and had great family values, and... I loved your shows in the afternoon, and I'll leave it at that then. I won't pursue what you were doing. I was always interested, and I lived abroad for a few years, and when I came back, you weren't about, and I did... And I don't normally Google things, and I didn't... I'm not a sort of someone that's following anybody other than just out of interest, but you've told me you're happy, and that's great.
Brilliant
about that. And I'm looking forward to the next three nights, because I'm an LBC listener now. But they mention on their forum, well, not on the LBC forum, but the Facebook forum, that you're on Talk Radio for three nights. And I thought, great, it'll be lovely to listen to him again.
Well, I started LBC. I think I'm the oldest going backer who's still alive. Although, yeah, I think I am. I was only about 12. I knocked on the door and asked them if I could sell them an interview I'd just done with an American actor who was staying at the Ritz, who was playing Tarzan in an upcoming movie. And the programme controller came up from the bowels, because LBC was then housed in a basement beneath Fleet Street in London. And he said, "Who's the man who wants to meet the arts producer?" And I said, "Oh, that's me." And he said, "We've just fired him. He was too expensive. Come into my office, dear boy." And I walked out 20 minutes later with a full-time job in radio. Now, so many people spend so much of their lives just trying to get a toehold in radio. And I'd been kicked out of college not 3 weeks before. And I took it on myself to interview this guy and try and sell it for £7. That was the going rate for an interview in those days. And the first radio station whose door I knocked on offered me a full-time job. And so I was head of arts at LBC, putting together an hour and a half of classical music every night, which was part of the LBC output from 7:30 till 9, and doing various arts interviews with people, because I didn't know much about opera, so I would just ask the questions. And then one day they didn't have enough journalists to go round, nothing new there, And so they said, why don't you come down and see and learn to be a journalist? So I did. Almost. And that would have been 1974, 75, I think. Something like that, maybe even earlier than that.
I'd have been 15 then.
You would have been 15.
But can I ask you a bit about Tarzan?
Pardon?
Can I ask you a little bit about Tarzan?
If that's your thing, yeah.
Well, no, you mentioned at the beginning of the... you think you were going to sell this Tarzan thing?
Yes, it was an actor called Ron Eli who played Tarzan or something like that.
Yeah, but Tommy, I'm dying to do this gag because I haven't done it for about 20 years.
Oh, okay, go on then, go on.
How come you haven't got a beard?
How come Tarzan hasn't got a beard? Yeah. I don't know how come.
There's no answer.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what I did learn to do when I was about 13, lying in bed, unable to go to sleep. And you know you come up with all sorts of things.
Yes.
Right. Well, so something I started doing in my bedroom alone when I was 13, at 10:30 at night, trying to go to sleep, was this. I would try and do the Tarzan cry. Can you do it? Have you even tried it, Rob?
No, I haven't. No.
Go
no,
on, give
no.
it a go. You know the one I mean, don't you?
I know exactly what you mean.
Go on, then do
and
it.
I did actually do a little bit of that type of thing, but I don't think we really ought to go into that. If you know what I mean.
Okay, I do, and so we won't.
At 14.
But thanks for your call anyway. Right.
Keep well, and I love your outlook and your positiveness, and I'd love to hear more of you. I hope something happens with you so you can go national again. We can hear you again talking.
I got it, Rob. Thanks, mate. Right, so, just quickly, see if I can do it again. I've done this for a long time. And then the elephants would all prick up their ears, you know, and the lions would start to gallop along and that sort of thing.
Wow.
So I was going to tell you about... Oh, no, I've got a joke. You may know it. Sam, Hayley, listener, if you know it, all right, just go along with it because it is a good joke. It's the only knock-knock joke I've ever heard that made me laugh. Do you know it, the new one?
No.
You sure? Sam, do you know it? No? Okay, I'll do it with you, Hayley, first. Ready? Okay, knock-knock.
Who's there?
A control freak. Now you say a control freak who?
A control freak who?
No, you missed it. I'll try it on Sam. Sam, knock knock.
Who's there?
A control freak. Now you say a control freak who?
A control freak. Now you say a control freak who?
No, that's not it either.
I don't get it.
No, the point is a control freak would tell you what to do next.
Oh.
No, that's pretty good.
That's a dad joke.
Let's try it again. Knock knock.
Who's there?
A control freak. Now you say a control freak who?
A control freak.
Oh, sorry, that's a good gag,
mate. I know,
it
doesn't make sense.
What we should do now is just come up to speed on one of Hayley's strands in the programme this evening. Gentle listener, you will remember is that she has brought in what she considers to be the most awful Christmas present she received this year. And she's asked if anybody wants to do a swap. And you've got a mug.
Somebody does. A mug? I've got a mug.
I
don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, I didn't get a mug offered to me. I got a flower, an amaryllis, which is a pink flower. Comes in a pot. I actually think this is quite a nice present. I'm not sure why you'd want to give it away. But Anthony Power on Twitter has tweeted me a lovely picture of an amaryllis ready to go in a pot plant. I'll have it if you don't want it. I don't know why you wouldn't want it, though.
OK, we'll get together and swap.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Let's move back to the phones, because we've been having a lot of fun on the phones this evening, and then I'll come back to the thing about underpants, which is quite poignant, I always think. Kyle is our next caller in Rochdale. Hey, Kyle.
Hi, Tommy. Hi, Hayley.
Hiya.
It's a question, Kyle. The part about flamingos earlier. My brother, who's 15 years younger than me, told me something last year, and I cannot believe it's true, and I'm sure that he's just having a laugh with me. So can I check with you two? Is that okay?
I guess.
He says that there are more fake flamingos in the world than real ones, and I think he's a liar.
Well, how many real ones are there, then? Do we know that? What is the population of... Hayley's working on it. Sam, could you find out how many artificial flamingos there are in the world? Yeah.
There's more than real ones, though, apparently. I call it my brother.
Yeah, well, where are all these artificial flamingos, then? In people's gardens, a bit like gnomes.
I think so, yeah. Well,
George Clooney's got one, I heard.
Well, that's one up already. But no, he rang me about this. The last year of this year.
Your brother.
He absolutely hates them because he said they stand around looking smug and don't really do much, and he just despises them.
I worry about them because their legs look so thin. You can't imagine that they're not about to... You know, you wouldn't want Fabian Delph coming in for a 50-50 ball if you were a Flamingo, would you?
Still, they always stand on one leg as well.
They do. Yeah. And aren't theirs the only knees that go the other way?
Oh, I think they bend the wrong way, don't they?
That's what I'm talking about.
They only live for 40 years. That's a shame, isn't it? They don't have
quite
a long
that's
lifespan.
That's quite a long time. That's old age in Russia. Not for Russian flamingos, for Russian people, according to a recent survey.
Oh.
Right, well, whilst Hayley's finding out what the global population of flamingos are, and Sam is finding out what the global population of artificial flamingos are, Carl, well, thank you for the thought and the observation, and we'll move quickly on to our next caller, who is Cozy.
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 Hi, Tommy.
All right, Cozy.
Mr. Legend.
So are you.
Well, no, you're a bigger legend than me, Sam. You're a bigger legend than me. Why are you on Talk Sport all the time? Or Talk Radio, sorry now.
Wherever it is, I'm peripatetic.
Well,
I've got a sticker and everything. I can park out right by the door at Waitrose.
Oh, no. Right. My earliest... tin food.
Tin food.
1943. Ambrosia tin rice.
Seriously?
No.
Seriously, son? No, I mean it, honestly. I live in a little town near Steeple Bumstead. You heard of that?
Steeple Bumstead. Of course. Steeple Bumstead. Just where is Steeple Bumstead again? I know I've driven through it.
It's Essex.
Yes.
I live in Haverhill, but it's near... there's a little train station. You just go through there.
Yeah.
And a train crashed one day, apparently. And me and my brother in the 70s walked down the, past a railway track, which Beeching cut it all off. Shut the line down, and we found some old ambrosia rice.
Yes.
What is it? And we ate it from 1943, and it's army rations. It's all grey, oh, not grey, green, and stamped on it the date.
When did you eat it?
Probably about 78.
And when did you find it?
78. We found it in 78. And we ate it.
What colour was it? Was it still white?
No, he says it was greyish.
It was grey.
The thing is, Cozzy...
sands were...
All right. No, the thing is, Cozzy, in itself, that is an interesting story, and I'm very grateful for it. It's colourful, and it's the sort of thing that you do when you're a boy, isn't it? But
well,
we were... technically, Hayley was looking for... the tin of food that you've got in the larder that has been there the longest.
I think that's a good story, though. I'll give him that.
Shall I tell you why?
Give you that, Cozzy.
Well, we were on our way to school one morning, and I was going to a grammar school, so I had one of those silly caps and everything, and a striped tie, and all the rest of
it. You went to grammar school, so you were quite harsh, weren't you?
It's like, Feltham, come on. But here's the thing. We got to the crossroads, this was about 7:45 in the morning. Now, you're not going to believe this, but scattered right across the road and across the pavement were dozens, if not hundreds, of small tins of double diamond. Double diamond. A double diamond works one. A double diamond works wonders, works wonders, works wonders.
No,
beer.
Double diamond.
Beer, mate. We were about 13 or 14.
How much did you pick up?
Well, I didn't have a briefcase then. Well, I couldn't afford one, so I was using this document case.
You went to grammar school, so you could afford one.
No, we didn't have 2 halfpennies. Apple for breakfast. Anyway... I managed to get 6 tins of double diamond into my attaché case, right? And now I'm heading for school.
Oh, right? The case was bag.
With 3/4 of a gallon of double diamond in my... for some reason...
Oh, the case was bag.
For
you
some...
attaché case.
No, hold on. For some reason...
Oh, I've got a load more than you did.
Yeah. For some reason...
Yeah. Right.
I didn't drink any of it. Because I was aware that if I drank any of this Double Diamond on my way to school, then probably Mr. Graham, who was nasty like that, would have smelt my breath and I would have been for it. But I had to get through the day with six tins of Double Diamond in my possession at school. And I, to my knowledge, I managed to do it. I don't know what I did. I can't remember what I did with the Double Diamond. I just remember the feeling I had at looking at all this free beer, age 13, at 7:45 in the morning in Feltham.
That's brilliant.
And so's Cozzy's story. Thank you very much indeed for that, Cozzy. What else are we looking at this evening? It's Talk Radio, of course. I'm Tommy. Hayley is here, synchronising everything. And Sam is here, pressing all the right buttons. But as Eric Morecambe said, not necessarily in the right order. Sorry about that. What would you, dear listener, like to be better at? Telephone number?
0344 499 1000.
Text if you prefer.
87222.
Tweeting, which is so easy.
At Talk Radio.
Once again, what would you like to be better at is one thing. And because we're a creative group of people, I added a little bit to that and said, what would you like to be worse at?
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
During the first part of this programme, stand by for Paul Ross in 2 hours' time to continue the fun. Because it's where it is, it's, what is it, the 27th today? It's that funny bit in the middle between Christmas and...
Has it got a name?
It has, and it's escaped me. There is a name, a nice name, a cute name, a funky name for the bit in the middle between Christmas and New Year's. But that's where we are. And so I'll tell you what's been great for me. It's been almost everywhere a Brexit-free holiday, and I aim to keep that going. The only thing I will say is that it's about time somebody else woke up to the fact that, if you ask me anyway, there's a hidden agenda behind Brexit for most of Europe and certain other nationalities to unify Ireland. And that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it there. We're going to leave that behind me now. You don't care, do you, Hayley?
No.
No, which is fair enough.
Perineum is what you're looking for.
Way?
It's the time between Christmas and New Year.
No. It's got a catchy...
No, that's what it says on Google.
Yeah, but it's got a catchy little thing. So far we have been talking about... I forgot what we've been talking about. I was going to clue you in. You were talking about socks.
Yes.
The oldest pair of socks that somebody has in the drawer.
And how many holes do you have before you throw them away?
What I wanted to touch on is that does everybody have their unmentionables in a pecking order? Sam's nodding, but at the same time grimacing. Do you know what I mean by that, Hayley?
No, but somebody's given me the answer to your Christmas and New Year question.
Okay, let's have that.
Winterval. So it's the interval, isn't it? The Winterval.
Yeah, it might be.
I like that.
I don't think that's the one I was thinking
Thank
of.
Thank you, Sam.
Anyway, thanks for that. So the question is, does everybody else have a sort of pecking order for their unmentionables, for their smalls, for your...
Oh, yeah, knickers? I have nice stuff.
So why is it that even though nobody will ever see them, we always make sure we're wearing our best pair when we go out somewhere posh?
Well, somebody might see them.
We know that they won't.
It depends on the situation.
Well, it might be a situation where you are absolutely certain that they won't.
OK. It makes you feel better, though, doesn't it? It's like wearing your best perfume. You have a best perfume.
I think it's one of those little human quirks that are universal, hardly ever mentioned, and explicable, but at the same time kind of weird. Other things that we thought we might talk about briefly this evening include Gogglebox on the radio. You were wondering, Hayley, whether there was room in the air on the airwaves for a radio version of Gogglebox,
yeah,
which is a great show.
I just don't know how you'd do it. You'd need to hook people up with microphones, wouldn't you, while they're listening to the radio, and then somehow put that down the line. I'm just not sure it'd be very interesting, because most people listen on their own, and they think their thoughts, but they don't say them out loud like you do when you're sitting on the sofa watching TV.
Right, so
maybe we scrap that up.
Get rid of that one.
It was a thought.
And what I like about you is that you put them out there, take chances and run scared. Rule 7.
Yeah.
Remember, couldn't remember what rule 7 was?
Yeah.
Take chances and run scared. In other words, give it a go. You won't know until you've tried it.
Yeah.
I worked with this guy in America who was hosting a breakfast talk radio show in Los Angeles, and then he'd go straight from there to host his own studio-based television discussion programme. And I tuned in to look at him on television, and he was awful. And you could see that he was awful and that he knew he was awful. And I met him for a beer the following evening, and I said, how's the television show going? Do you know what he said? I'll never forget this. He said, they hired the wrong guy. Isn't that brilliant?
Wow.
It's not his fault.
It's their fault.
It's their fault. He's rubbish because they hired the wrong guy.
Wow.
And I thought, yeah, that's Americans for you. Love Americans. Let's have a quick word with Alan, who's been kind enough to call the programme. I think we've spoken before, Alan, in Birmingham.
Hi, Tommy. Happy New Year.
Not yet. It's a bit early.
No idea about Gogglebox on the radio.
We think it wouldn't work.
Well, I think it personally would, because you've got the catch-up service, listening on demand and all that.
Hmm. Well, it's still in the mix. But I think we're probably going to let that one go, let that one out to pasture.
And another one of your topics, the worst thing you could be good at, I need help in choosing horse racing winners.
You need help with horse winners?
Choosing winners of horse racing.
Yeah. Well, what system do you use? Do you use the form, or if you like the name, or the colours of the silks? What's your system?
I just go by the old sticking the pin in.
Yes. That can work.
I wasn't worse yesterday.
What did you back?
I had Thistle Crack to win him at King George.
No. No, he's not even the best of the Tizard horses.
Well, he came second.
I know.
Better than Native River. And he won a Gold Cup.
I know, I had Native River, so you and I can both commiserate there.
Well, we've had the winner of the Welsh National today.
Well, I did. It wasn't difficult. That was easy, that one.
Well, I thought Chepstow would be a harder course than Aintree.
Alan, thank you for your call, and there's much there to ponder. So I'm very grateful indeed. Statistics. What do you say about statistics, Hayley? It seems to me that if you can back something up with a statistic, especially if it's something fantastic like 62.7... you've already won the argument.
I think 95% of statistics are made up.
Yeah.
How about that statistic?
OK, I'm going to try a few at you, and Sam as well. So, how does this strike you? 40% of women have hurled footwear at a man.
Oh, yes, I like that one. I think it's probably higher, actually.
Do you really think
so?
Yeah, not in Venom.
Oh.
Not like that bloke who... Do you remember the bloke who threw a shoe at George Bush?
No.
Do you not remember? There was a press conference post-Iraq war and some journalist got really cross with George Bush and threw his shoes at him. And Bush was really cool. He just kind of ducked left and it went past his shoulder. And then the other one came and he ducked past his shoulder and he carried on. It's funny the things that people do that win you their... you know, win you their support. And George Bush was so cool with shoes being thrown at him. I quite liked him. 40% of cat and dog owners carry pictures of their pet in their wallet.
Sam's got a dog. Should we see if this is true?
Well, I don't... How old is that statistic?
Yeah, that's true.
Because in today's society... Just
shut up. All right? Kids. Don't you hate them?
Kids these days.
Kids! Huh? It's like, you know, what was the busted thing that somebody was on about?
Sam got a Christmas present.
Yeah.
Tell the story, Sam.
So it turns out that me and my sister gave each other the same Christmas present.
Which was
tickets to go and see Busted. So instead of having two tickets between us, we now have four.
Okay, so there's
But you're going to pick the best ones. Like, did you both spend the same amount, or did you, like, get front row tickets and she bought, like...
No, we both got standing tickets, so they're the same.
Okay.
The issue here was that I had to say what's busted... And you gave me that look.
Do you not know the year 3000? That's what he said.
And it's this thing. I explained to you, you know, my youngest son requires me not to have any knowledge of anything that pertains to life after 2008. If I do, then I'm being annoying.
Oh.
Yeah, pre-2008.
Yeah, around about 2008. 70% of all boats sold are used in fishing. We're just going through some of the statistics that are out there. This one is truly, if it's true, this one is the most interesting of the batch that I've got at the moment, okay? 50% of bank robberies take place on Fridays.
Oh, why do you think that is?
Should we assume it's true? Because if it,
yeah, go on, I like this.
Yeah. Well, just stop and think it through. It's like a payday thing, is it?
Oh.
If you haven't got payday, you might as well supplement or fabricate payday by sticking up a bank.
Yeah, or maybe is it because what do banks do with the money? Don't they ship it off somewhere at the weekend? So maybe they save up all their money and then on a Friday they've got the bulk of their money before they send it off to wherever money goes.
And the armoured car comes on Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Yes. Possibly. That's good thinking. Good lateral thinking. I like very much. Remind us of the telephone number and then we'll rush to Neil, who's our next caller.
0344 499 1000.
What you got, Neil? Hi.
Hi, Tommy. I heard a little bit earlier.
You couldn't have heard it later because of the space-time continuum, but I won't bore you with the Doctor Who stuff.
Nah, it weren't. It was a bit about you finding the beer on the side of the road.
Yeah. Double diamond.
When I was at school, right, honestly, truthfully, after lunchtime, we used to have like a social event, and one day we turned up there, and the police were there.
Excellent.
And my friend Stewie, that used to play rugby with me, he was a big lump of a lad, he used to go down the pub at lunchtime.
Yeah.
When we turned up, the police produced a breathalyzer. And our house master said, anyone who have a go, he went, yeah, I'll have a go at that, please. And he failed at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
What age was he here? Neil?
He was 15.
15 and he failed a breathalyzer at school. Shouldn't laugh, really, but will.
He failed it. The police officer couldn't believe it. He went, what? He was not able to live it.
Okay, listen, had he been playing a lot of rugby before he volunteered to have a breathalyzer after being to the pub for lunch?
He was a big lump of a boy, but he actually used to go downtown and buy us like 10 tags, hide them in his boots, walk back into school. But when this police officer said, would you like to blow in here? He went, yeah, well, then it was awesome.
He played up front, didn't he? He was a scrum player, wasn't he?
Yes,
of course he was.
He was a big one. I used to play hooker.
Yeah.
Well, that's not like in the fancy dress stuff.
No.
But he used to chew on one thumb and I used to chew on the other bloke's thumb.
Yes. Did they teach you to do the two-footed hooking where you just hang from the shoulders of the two props? And you use both feet to scrabble the ball back?
No, see, that's a cheating way.
I know that, and it's also very painful if you're the hooker opposite a hooker who's doing that.
But
because you don't wear shin pads in rugby.
My right thumb got chewed off by the opposition one day, and Stuart, my friend that got done for being slightly over the top, I said, Stewie, he's chewing my thumb. And all he did was just go, boom. Suddenly this other prop went very limp.
Understood.
He just started to collapse a little bit.
Well, if you ever saw me from the side, Neil, you would know that I played rugby up until the age of 20 when I stopped for a very good reason because I collided with the back of one of my own players' heads. And my nose was as flat across my face as that of the legendary actor Jack Palance. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know Jackie Palance.
Jackie Palance, what a man. Absolutely, but I think he took a monkey wrench in the face at an early age, and I looked just like Jack Palance. So much so that on my way to hospital, I insisted that they stopped off at the station where there was a photo booth because I wanted a photograph of my nose with me looking like Rocky Graziano. If you know who he is. Right.
Yes.
And I didn't play rugby again.
Tommy, you're not meant to have kept that look, though.
No, well, what happened was when I got to outpatients, they saw me last because rugby injuries were considered self-inflicted wounds.
Yep.
And so they would be last on the order of priority. You know, kids with saucepans on their heads and what have you, and grannies who'd slipped on icy pavements. Understandably, they take priority over rugby idiots.
Yeah.
But then the doctor just went, well, you've broken your nose. That was it. And I said, I know. And he said, would you like me to straighten it for you? So I thought, I bet I had to say yes. So he got out of his top pocket a silver ballpoint and stuck it...
Oh, don't tell me about it. And stuck up one nostril and
up one nostril, click, and up the other nostril and click.
Yes. It's not a good feeling, Tommy, is it?
You've broken your nose as well?
Oh, yes. Several times. But that the worst thing I had was the tuning fork. They put one up one side and one the other... And they go,
hang on. Was this a surgical instrument that resembled a tuning fork or something that was actually built in China for correcting broken noses? Or was it a tuning fork?
I think it was actually a tuning fork because when you did it, it went twang.
No, I don't believe that, but I do love your story. And you've given us an interesting strand, Neil, and I'm asking you this at home, although it probably doesn't apply to you because you've led far too spotless a life. But if anybody can come close to Neil's 8 broken noses, did you say?
I would say 8, yes.
Yeah. I'm 4, so I'm ballpark in your territory. Anyway, Neil, thanks for your call. Lovely talking to you. Call us again sometime. Nice man. So what's that number again, if you can match or come close to, or even if you have a broken nose story? Because it's quite a credential for men in some ways, providing it's done lawfully on the sporting field, or perhaps somebody opened a door as they were rushing past, you know. You know, a nose injury is kind of...
cool, isn't it?
It's a little bit cool, yeah. Painful, but cool. So what's the number?
0344 499 1000.
Beautiful. Now, other statistics. We're doing some statistics at the moment for no particular reason other than that they're vaguely interesting. The average four-year-old asks over 400 questions a day.
Why?
Yeah. August is the month when most babies are born.
Oh.
Now, I had to stop and think about that
one. Yeah, you have to go back 9, don't
yes.
you?
Because I always used to do this joke whereby somebody would come in and say, Angela would come in and say, I'm pregnant. I said, when's the baby due? And she would go, October. And I always go, October, September, August. Just by way of a joke.
Was
not,
I there?
Not a very good joke, but a bit of a joke. So if most babies are born in August, that means that most activity that leads to babies is happening in January?
December. When it's cold.
When it's cold.
Yeah.
And you're inside more.
And there are office parties.
Yes.
And drink might be taken. I wonder. This is the one thing we don't do when we plan babies, is not to plan them. You know, we plan everything else. We think about the names and we decide that the spare room will do and then buy a cot and, you know, and all that. But nobody ever thinks, unless they're trying really hard to have a baby because they've been told it's going to be difficult, nobody actually thinks about what would be the best day for a baby to be born. And I would say it is about the 7th of September is the ideal date for a baby to be born.
Why is that?
Well, because they're going to be they're going to be the oldest child in their year, in their academic year, and that does benefit them. Until quite recently, most England footballers were born in September, October, December. And I once played against a junior football team. And the coach told our coach he only hired boys. He only used boys who were born in September, October, November because they were so much bigger than the boys who were born in June, July,
yeah,
August.
Yeah, they'd be taller, wouldn't they?
Bigger, stronger, you know, and a bit more mature and the rest of it. So, the average adult spends about 12 minutes in the shower per day. Just doing some random statistics, good listener. You can nod off if you wish and then come back in, if, you know, wake up. Nod off, wake up. Because your theory is that a lot of people are listening in bed.
I'd have thought I would be in bed at this time if I wasn't here.
Okay, so. But would you be listening to the radio and how?
Yes, in my headphones.
Okay, well, we'll have that in mind.
Yeah.
So, good listener, if that is your circumstance, feel free to nod off and then come back and nod off and come back. The average person keeps old magazines for 29 weeks before they throw them out.
No, I would chuck away a magazine. I'm a bit OCD with recycling, actually, so I would say if I had a magazine, I'd chuck it away as soon as I read it. 29 weeks is a long time.
That's what it says. Depends, though. I mean, some magazines you like to have lying around because they speak of a better you.
Yeah.
You know, Country Life, for example. If you ever bought a Country Life, you never throw it away. Just leave it on the side.
Mine's more kind of Now or News, the celebrity gossip type stuff. So it's old the moment you get it anyway.
This is an old statistic. The average person spends about 2 years on the phone in a lifetime. That is now much higher.
That's ridiculous.
What do you mean ridiculous?
When did you get that statistic? In, well, like 1950 or something?
No, I got it about 2 days ago, but it is not, you know, tabulated when they said that.
I could spend 2 hours a day.
2 years. Did I say 2 hours?
You said 2 hours.
I was lying.
Oh.
I was showing...
At least I was listening.
Particular sort of fact blindness. It's different from dyslexia. It's something that a lot of politicians suffer from. It's fact blindness. It's a new thing, isn't it? You're tuned to Talk Radio. I'm Tommy Boyd. We have Hayley with us and we have Sam. And when we come rushing back, which of your topics do you think that we ought to discuss whether or not we're going to discuss?
I like the victory thing. What have you been proud of yourself of this year? We're coming up to the end of the year. Let's feel good about ourselves.
Nice one. Yeah. That's what we'll do.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We're wondering what's the best victory that people have had this year. You, dear listener, it might be a little tiny victory. I'm just trying to think of the tiniest possible victory that I've had this year, and it may be over my gas cooker. Because three of the rings on my gas cooker do not ignite when I turn on the gas and press the little ignition button.
So you've only got one?
Yeah, I've got one. And I've overcome this because rather than buy a new hob, is that what it's called? The
yes.
top of a gas oven, yep. The hob. It only would cost 150 quid, but 150 quid's 150 quid. You know, and you were talking about a new Mercedes the other day, when we were in production.
Yeah.
What was your point there?
I was making the point that we didn't want to hear stories of people buying like an extravagant new Mercedes. I want to hear stuff like that.
Real stuff.
Real stuff.
How about this one then? Because I've got a different phone, I can't attach it to the dashboard of my car and use it for sat-nav purposes because it hasn't got the little metallic magnetic thing on it that the old one had.
Oh.
And I only discovered this 10 minutes before I was setting off to drive to the studios this evening.
That's handy.
So I had to make a makeshift mobile phone stand that would go on my dashboard and obviously be legal and everything. So what I had to do was to go to the garage and look for anything that looked as though it might double as a mobile phone stand. And I found a large block of polystyrene that had been used to wrap the small gramophone vinyl record player that my youngest wanted for Christmas, and using a carving knife, I was able to fashion an L-shaped mobile phone stand, which would not only contain the mobile phone if I used blue tack to stick my mobile phone to the stand, but would stand on the dashboard, provided the dashboard would tolerate blue tack.
Wow, I'm genuinely impressed by that.
And that was a small victory, and it's very much in that area of non-affluence that you were talking about with your Mercedes-Benz,
yeah.
Am I right?
Mine's a bit rubbish now compared to that.
What's your victory this year?
I fried an egg for the first time.
How did you do it?
Oh, I got my YouTube out and I Googled.
You YouTubed how to
Yeah, because I've never done it before, so I didn't know how. So okay. I had to Google it. And I also had to Google it with butter because I didn't have anything else, so I wondered, could I make it with butter?
Okay.
So, yeah, so I got my little pan, I put some butter in, I waited for the 2 minutes that it said, you needed to wait for it to bubble, and then I tap, 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 and then I made my egg for the first time. But it did backfire on me, though, a little bit.
What happened?
Because I got so excited that I could cook eggs. For 3 nights in a row, we had
nothing
eggs for
eggs.
Dinner, and then I had a stomachache for like a week.
Okay.
I think I had too many eggs in one go.
That's interesting. Jamie Oliver won't chop garlic. He will only crush it. Or slice it. Because he says that little nodules of chopped garlic give him the most terrible stomachache.
Hmm.
And you get stomachache from eating
too many
fried eggs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with one every couple of days, but I think two...
Right.
to a day for 3 days is probably too much.
Let me just ask the listener. Good evening again, listener. You were listening there to Hayley's first time ever attempt at frying an egg. I'm confident, dear listener, that you've fried many an egg from an early age. And you've done some well, and you've done some not so well. But let's just go back through her recipe for a fried egg one more time and count the mistakes.
It was on YouTube. I watched the video and everything.
Right. First of all...
What did I do wrong?
First of all, how high was the heat?
Well, I don't know. It goes up to, like, 9 on my hob thing.
Yes.
And I'd had it about 5 or 6. Because any more than that, it was going mad. It was literally spitting at me. It was dangerous.
But there you are.
I needed goggles and everything.
Yes, it will spit if you get the heat too high. And you don't want the heat too high. You want to cook it slowly, otherwise you'll have a brown, crispy egg on the bottom and a raw yolk on top.
No, it was runny. I had a runny egg. It was good.
You want it runny, but you want it cooked. You want it raw.
Maybe that's why I had a tummy ache.
If you've been eating raw eggs, there's always that possibility. I refer you to the career of Edwina Curry.
Oh, yes. Now I remember.
Come on.
Oh, gosh.
So... when you went crack, crack and you cracked the egg, whereabouts in the saucepan did you put the egg? In the middle or on the edge?
Middle.
You see?
Is that wrong?
Amateurs.
I should have called you, shouldn't I?
I can hear the listener going, oh, that woman. Saucepans, and people don't realise this, are built on a camber, just like a road. You're looking at me as though I'm speaking Serbo-Croat.
I've never built a road before, so I don't know what a camber is.
Oh, right. Well, so that you don't get puddles in the middle of a road, all roads are built on a camber so that, the rainwater falls away to either side and is collected in the gutter where it is eventually put into a drain.
That's a good idea.
Travels into a drain. Did you not know that?
Nope.
OK, well, I'm not going to, you know, oh, you girls, because that's old-fashioned. But, funnily enough, most football pitches used to be built on a camber. For the same reason. Because I remember the first time I went to a football match, I was down at eye level and I noticed that I couldn't see the other side of the pitch because, like the earth, a football pitch used to be round so that the water would run off to either side. This was before they had drainage systems. But I digress. Most saucepans, I think you'll find, most saucepans are higher in the middle than they are at the edge.
Mm. I'd have to check when I get home. I will be checking and reporting back tomorrow.
Gentle listener, if you have a moment... and you know where your nearest saucepan is, you might care to bear me out.
Can we have a saucepan correspondent?
The reason for this is, the reason you should be aware of this is because the fat or oil or butter, because of this, will collect more around the edges of the saucepan than in the very middle. Right? And you need to fry your egg not too shallow. There needs to be enough oil to get up slightly over the edge of the white. And that's why you need to crack the egg towards the edge of the saucepan. Mm. Frying pan.
I will try better next time.
And did you flick any of the oil onto the top of the fried egg?
No. Should I?
Oh, my God.
Gosh.
It's amazing how wrong people can get. But it's important. I think one of the chefs, Michel Roux or somebody like that, when a young chef comes to him and says... give me a job, he says, fry me an egg. Yep.
Is that the first test?
Yep.
Oh.
Now, there's two ways, he says, of doing it. They either go, fry an egg, and they get all flashy, and like Paul Hollywood, they crack it with one hand, stick it in the old frying pan, slosh it around and go, there you go. He doesn't hire them. He hires the people who look at the 6 eggs in the pack and go, not that one, not that one, this one. Like that. And they get a knife and they very gently go all the way halfway round with the knife, just opening the egg very, very carefully. Check the heat is exactly right and then go over the heat and just carefully open the shell. And like that. Great care, you see. You're licking your lips at the thought of a fried egg,
hello.
I hope, there, young Hayley. Mm. Let's rush to the phones. Quick reminder of our number, if you have a moment, dear listeners, to join us.
0344 499 1000.
To Brighton and Julian. Hey, Julian.
Hello, Tommy.
Julian.
Belated Merry Christmas.
And, wait a minute. Yeah. What's that word when somebody has a baby early?
Premature.
Premature Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. It will be. Tommy, we played some Christmas games on Christmas Day, and I wonder if you can be an independent adjudicator.
Love to.
Because my brother devised a game that was based on the alphabet, and you had to name various items, and it always had to begin with whatever letter was randomly selected.
Okay.
Now, the letter was S.
S.
For sugar. And the category was animals that have been in a film.
Simba from The Lion King.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I was going. And I put Shere Khan, as in The Jungle Book.
Yes.
And my brother overruled it and said, no, it has to be snakes, it has to be, or snail.
Oh, species.
No, yeah, but he just said an animal that has been in a film. Surely that suggests a particular animal and not, or an individual animal, rather than just, as you say, a species.
Well, Hayley's very much on your side.
Yeah, because she went Simba.
Instinctively, she went the way of you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
The other factor is, if your answer has to be unique, if anyone else has put it, then you cancel each other out. But
yes.
Simba and Shere Khan would have both got a point. But yeah. I was disqualified because that was the name of an animal rather than an animal.
Yes. But it was the name of a fictional animal.
All it said, all that we had was the name of, or name an animal that appears in a film.
You see, there are three possible answers here. You can have the name of a species.
Snake.
You can have the name of a fictional animal.
Shere Khan.
Or you could have the name of a real animal, i.e. Mrs. Ramsbottom next door's Sooty the Cat.
Yes.
You see. So already we are really looking at a divided house.
Yeah, we are. And I lost the quiz by 1 point
because
of that Shere Khan disqualification.
Is he your older brother or younger brother?
He's my younger brother.
Well, he's wrong, then. He's wrong.
Exactly.
Younger brothers are always wrong. This is the law of the jungle. Or, well, Feltham, anyway.
Well said, Tommy.
And well said, Julian.
Great to hear you on the air again. I wish it was every week. I really do.
Kind of you. Thank you. Nice man. Well, I would say that, wouldn't I? Speaking of which, I'm going to read this one out, even though it's a bit sycophantic. It's kind. Will Jackson has tweet... Loving listening to you on talk radio reminds me of listening to LBC Under the Covers as a kid, Tommy. And Jeremy Beadle it was before you on Nightline. Two of my inspirations for wanting to... I'm going to try and read the rest of it. For wanting to do radio. And that's from Will Jackson. So thank you very much indeed for that, Will. And I ended that sentence like that because I'm fiddling with the technology. That's why I said...
If you click on one, it makes it bigger. You get all the text.
Because normally I'd say for that too. But it came out as for that too to cover the fact that I was trying to click.
Okay.
Oh, here we are. Thank you. Hayley and Tommy, our victory this year. We've been asking listeners about your victory in 2018. Could be big, small or middling. Our victory this year is becoming grandparents.
Oh, that's lovely.
This is great. This is from Don Gibson. Thanks, Don. To Oliver. In April, his dad last rang a talk radio station in the early 90s and talked to Tommy on Christmas Day.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I was ever on Christmas Day.
You said you were on LBC once.
I was on LBC once on Christmas Day. But I don't think I was ever on talk radio on Christmas Day, because by that time I had a young family of my own, and I don't think I ever... missed a Christmas with my own children. But yes, I had a terrible Christmas Day on LBC because I went home to my parents' house for Christmas, and I took home as a gift to sort of contribute to the eating and drinking, not one but two bottles of port. Now, port is very Moorish, as we all know. And as the Christmas Eve evening wore on, I opened the bottle of port and rather enjoyed that first glass. It's so mellifluous. By the time I finished the first bottle of port, I was aware that I would probably live forever and nothing else mattered. So I was well down the second bottle of port in the company of my granddad, who wasn't quite as enthusiastic about the port as me. And I went to bed. The following morning, I was due on the air at LBC at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I was so the worse for wear that at the age of 28, my father had to run me to the radio station and help me up the steps and into the studio. And I'd been on the air for about 8 minutes, very blue and queasy, when the managing editor came in. And what a lot of bosses do at Christmas, if they have staff who are working, is to go in on Christmas Day and make out that we're all muckers together.
In this together.
It's not true. They just don't like their families. And he came into the studio with a tray of champagne. And the last thing you want to see when you are so hungover, that it was very unprofessional, is a glass of champagne. And to have to drink it whilst the managing editor is standing watching you, reading the weather. But I did. And I managed to keep the contents of my stomach in my possession until the first commercial break at 10:15 a.m. And I remember to this day that it was a green tin waste paper bin in the studio that was kind enough to help me out in my darkest hour of need. But no, I don't think... hey, Don, if your boy is around and wants to remind us when it might have been that I might have been on talk radio on Christmas Day, please do. So I'm just checking tweets. Oh, Don has got back. Christmas Eve, Tommy, not Christmas Day. Well, in fact, I think you wrote Christmas Eve in the first place, Don, and it's another example of me having fact blindness.
I love it.
Right. So what's the greatest victory you've had this year? And also, what is the thing you'd like to be less talented at? Because sometimes people are good at things and they kind of wish they weren't because they're stuck with it.
Oh, I see what you mean. You get pigeonholed.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, reminder that our telephone number is...
0344 499 1000.
And if you'd like to be kind enough to bung us a tweet...
at Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
He's good, Jamie East, but the only thing I would say, and I will say, I would say it to his face if I ever met him. He is good. He's very good. But the only thing I would say to his face if I met him is that if I had to be one of the four points of the compass, I wouldn't have been East.
Oh, okay.
What would you think I was going to say?
I don't know.
Look at your face.
I'm a little bit worried, if I'm honest.
I'm a professional. I'm just saying, I would have loved to have been North. North is a really strong name. You know, Bob North. Isn't that a great name?
Yeah, it's
name?
A good name.
Hayley North. Sam North. It's a great name, isn't it? Oliver North. Oh, no, he was a war criminal, wasn't he? Yeah. Anyway, South is quite a good name as well. And I like West. Yeah. Everton had a goalkeeper called Gordon West.
Kim Kardashian, that's her surname, West now, because she married Kanye West.
There you are, you see. But East, I didn't know you could be called East. Really?
Who knew?
It's just like so many people are called Wright, aren't they? Mm. There's so many ways of spelling it. You're Wright this, you're Mr. Wright, you're Miss Wright, Mrs. Wright. But you never have you ever met anybody called Left?
No, actually.
No, there you are, you see. These things are all worth thinking about in the great melting pot that is life. Not for long. Talk radio is the correct word for this period, Twixmas, Edward says. We're talking about the name that's been given, and it's quite a catchy name, to the period between Christmas and New Year. And Edward wonders if it's Twixmas.
I like Twixmas.
It's a good one, but I don't think it's the
one
that I can't
remember. We had Winterval suggested as well.
Winterval is also a good one, but not the one... Now, I hesitate to read out tweets which have my name and the word sack in them.
Go on.
Okay. Paul says, not many things better than to hit the sack and find Tommy Boyd is on talk radio.
That's lovely.
Phew. Am I still the most sacked man in British radio history?
You could be. I don't know. We'd have to research.
I hope so.
Are you proud of that?
It's a bit like having four broken noses. Well, no, not four broken noses, having had one's nose broken four times. It's a credential in the in the world. In the, I nearly said in the male world, but I'm working very hard on talking to people of all genders, and there are about 72 now, in the same way.
Right.
As people. Not easy. And Paul Molestone has tweet, Tommy Boyd, and then two emojis that are smiling and a thumbs up, and Night Trek. OK, I think one of the things that's nice about hearing somebody's voice on the radio, and I do this when I hear Tony Blackburn, it takes me back to when I was 14. Mm. And Tony was introducing The Breakfast Show on Radio 1, and I noticed that at 7:30 every morning, which was when his peak audience was, he played the most popular song of the day. That was the first time I realised that there was something more to this radio than just stick it up there. So I get it when people get taken back to, you know, the age of 14 just by somebody's voice on the radio. I don't think mine's changed an awful lot, really.
No, you sound young.
Night Trek, thank you. You don't look 36. Night Trek, and Sam leans across just to double check by, because he's behind the glass screen. He had to lean to his left there. I sort of lean to his right, just as though he'd never seen Hayley before. To double check that she doesn't look 36. Am I right? Does she not look 36?
The answer is yes, Sam.
Night Trek was a feature on a radio show that I did. Again, it was back, way back on LBC, which was actually, I thought it was one of the worst features on the show.
Oh, tell us.
Well, it was a London-only radio station at that time, LBC. It still is, but it pretends it's national. And that meant that everybody listening had a book in the house. Everybody had one book in the house. It wasn't a Bible. Telephone directory didn't count. Every single listener at this time, 1980, in London, owned an A to Z, which was a little paperback book containing maps that showed every single street in London and Greater London.
Mm.
Okay. So what I used to do was find a place and come up with a stupid clue, like an anagram of Shaftesbury Avenue, famous road in London, and then you'd start there. And then I'd say, go north along St Squidlerbeck. You see how rubbish it was. And then people would work out that Squidlerbeck was an anagram of Shaftesbury Avenue, so they'd be joining in the Night Trek. And there'd be five clues spread through the hour, a cunning way of making sure that people listened through until the next news break.
That's really cool.
It's rubbish.
I like it.
Absolute garbage.
It's a bit like The Knowledge, but on steroids, isn't it?
It's not unlike The Knowledge, which is what black cab drivers still do, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. Do you know, driving through the city today in the evening was an absolute dream because there were no cabs.
Mm.
Now, cab drivers will tell you that the roads would be a lot better if there were no private cars on the road, but it did make driving a lot less stressful, there being no black cabs.
Yeah.
Mm. So that was Night Trek. Picking up a few tweets that are aimed at other shows, so forgive me just for pausing and crossing them. Edward says, I saw you on The Bill a few months ago on cable channel, Tommy. Do you have any memories of this appearance? You were very good. Mm-hmm. Yes, I actually had the main role in an episode of The Bill.
Were you a villain or a goodie?
I think I was a villain. I was a radio host.
Oh, you're playing yourself.
Now, what happened was I played a character whose name was rather strangely bland. I was Steve Jones, and I was hosting a phone-in programme. And my guest this morning is Detective Inspector, and it was a copper. And what happened was, during the course of the programme, a man who had taken a young person hostage phoned in to the phone-in programme, and the Detective Inspector and Steve Jones had to resolve the situation.
Yeah. Oh.
And I was rubbish. Because at one point, the director came down to me, and do you know what he whispered in my ear? He went, you're acting. See? And I went, oh, thank you very much. And he went, no. He said, stop acting. Because I was doing everything a little bit exaggerated, you know?
Hamming it up.
Yeah. And I realised that actually, in any case, when you act, most of your acting is reaction. You don't have to actually remember your lines. You could read them because the camera's only on you when the other person's talking. So that you pull a funny face all the time like you just did then.
Hmm.
You see.
Shows an education. I'm learning everything.
Now, I've got another little quirky idea that's a sort of a semi-party thing, almost a party game, but not, that we could play this evening if you're interested.
I like a game.
All right, then. OK, you might not have heard the answer to this, so you won't be able to do it, but you might at home be able to do it. OK, I'm going to tell you a very short story, and it is the opening line of a song. OK, so it's this. A man called Frank Evans buys up all the barbecues that are for sale in Lidl. And that means that anybody who wants a Lidl barbecue grill has to go to Frank Evans. So what's the song?
I don't understand. Read the rules out again.
I don't
understand.
From that story, right. You can extrapolate
a song.
Or work out, if you want, you know, GCSE. Work out. 2-1 at Reading. Extrapolate. A song title. Not a song title so much as the opening.
Right.
Lyric of a song. So a man called Frank Evans buys up all the grills in Lidl. So if you want a grill from Lidl, you have to go to Frank Evans.
I've got no clue, Sam. Oh, he's not. He's on the phone.
What's the number?
0344 499 1000.
And the other thing I wanted to wonder about is this, and I was wondering about this as I was listening to Lunchtime today. I was listening to...
Jamie East.
Christo
Fufas.
Christo, that's right. Sorry, name escaped me for a moment. I was listening to Christo's show, and he was having an argument with a lever.
Oh.
A lever. And the lever was kind of all over him, and Christo was being quite, I thought, scientific... And the lever kept sort of going, aha, got you, snowflake, and all that sort of thing.
Mm.
And he was happy to be described as a lever. And Christo produced that thing. No, the guy produced this thing to Christo, which is, he said, I'm afraid this is Brexit. He said, I'm fed up with hearing that not everybody who voted leave is a racist, but everybody who's a racist voted leave. And that was what the caller said, you see. Mm. And he kept going on about lever this and lever that. And it just occurred to me that if Remainers wanted to be as harsh as you might need to be over the next few months, if Remainers think that they can overturn the previous vote in a future referendum, one of the things they could postulate is whether certain people were told when they were 16 years of age that they had no further future in education. And they were going to be asked to be leavers. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
It's rubbish, but it's worth thinking about. Let's take Malcolm's call. Malcolm, you're on Talk Radio. Hello, mate.
Good evening, Tommy. Good evening, Hayley.
Hi.
Compliments of the season. Right. You've been watching Gigi because the Lidl and Frank Evans is Saint Heaven for little girls.
Exactly.
I believe.
Exactly.
Well done.
And thank you, Pat, who also got it, who tweeted, Frank Evans for little grills. Do you know the song?
Yeah, I know the song, but I would never have got that. Well done.
Sam, you're good at this. Can you get it up? It's by... Who's it by? Malcolm?
It's Maurice Chevalier.
Maurice Chevalier. If you can YouTube Maurice Chevalier... Thank Evans for little girls.
Gigi.
Yeah. But it's quite a good game, isn't it, Malcolm, if you're old enough?
Very good one, yeah. Going back to the period between Christmas and New Year...
Yes.
I don't know whether it's right or not, but if I was writing a song about it, I'd call it Winterlude.
That's good, too.
Oh, that's nice.
That's good, too. Just waiting to see whether...
Just
waiting to see if we can get a quick version of Maurice Chevalier... I'll sing it, shall I? Frank Evans, for little girls.
Each time I see a little girl of 5 or 6 or 7, I can't resist a joyous urge to smile and say, thank heaven. For little girls. For little girls get bigger every day.
Thank you. Yeah, just thinking about it, it's just as well that we got that last line in, because he's not singing in praise of little girls of that age, he's singing in praise of the girls that they grow into when they are of, you know, of adulthood.
Yeah. And I remember years ago working with a comedian called Johnny Hackett, who used to parody it as Thank Heaven for Little X.
No.
Which you have to be of a certain age and female to appreciate was a brand of corsetry.
Oh, right.
It's a thought you were talking about, like, chromosomes and stuff.
No. Mm.
So what chromosomes are you talking about here?
You know, like X and Y. Like, girls yes. are X and men's are boys are Y, aren't they?
Yes, doesn't it? A boy has two Y and one X, and a girl has two X and one Y. I don't get it, really.
I definitely don't.
Do you know, it's ages since I've tried to pronounce DNA. It's dionuclearibose. Oh, I can't do it. Something along those lines.
I didn't even know it stood for anything, DNA. I thought it was just
DNA. Do you
DNA?
Ever sometimes try and remember things just so that you can say them later and appear clever?
Yeah.
Do you? Does anybody else do that? Do you do that, Malcolm?
Sometimes you think of things after the event that you wish you'd said at the time.
Yes.
All the time.
But
for example, I was given Stephen Hawking's Brief Answers to Big Questions for Christmas.
Oh.
And I was reading that, and in the first chapter, I was completely detained by the fact that I did not know that the awful illness that he dealt with so heroically throughout his life was called amyophobic lateral sclerosis. But how sad am I that I wanted to make sure I would be able to mention that name at some point in public and people would go, oh, he's clever. Mm, yeah. I know. It's a bit pathetic, really, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I think, I mean, personally, it's a matter that the mind is very clever and the mind will collect what I call trivia. Just like the reference I've just made as a parody to Thank Heaven for Little Girls. It's 1967, so it was in the back of my mind, but something brought it into the forefront.
Yes. Yes, it is amazing how the mind works. Do you ever meditate, Malcolm?
No.
It works for some and not for others. I've got to dash on because we're heading towards the news, Malcolm, but I have enjoyed your call and congratulations and thank you for cracking the stupid party game, the answer to which was Frank Heaven for Little Girl. Frank Heaven. Thank Heavens thank for Heavens. Little Girls. Now, my favourite bit of a late-night phone-in programme is the last bit. Building up towards Paul Ross at 1 o'clock. And we don't know what we're going to be doing exactly between 12 and 1, do we?
No.
But it's going to be very much after the aurora of the previous 2 hours. I think that's about as well as I can describe it. It's Tommy and Hayley and Sam. Reminder, our phone number is
0344 499 1000.
All right, see you the other side of this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
I had to put together a news programme for the early morning Boxing Day when I was back as a journalist producer in Fleet Street. And I learned a really important lesson about this time of the year. And I don't know whether it works to this day, but it was as follows. I noticed that anybody who had a press release about a really non-news event would, what's called, embargo it for midnight on Christmas Day, saying if you dare to broadcast any news of this story prior to midnight on Christmas Day, there will be repercussions. And we were so scant for news at the time. And the world was going on as it did, but all there was the Queen and the Pope. The Pope and the Queen. Queen, Pope, Pope, Queen. What are you leading with? Pope? No, we're going with Queen. It was like that. Anyway, through came the embargoed for midnight Christmas Day story, and it was that a woman was going to attempt in a Soho restaurant to break the world non-stop belly dancing record. But because we were in the twinterval, or whatever it is we're calling the gap between Christmas and New Year's Day, I sent a reporter. Now, a woman going for the world belly dancing record is not the greatest radio.
lots of jingle jangles.
My point is, it was I was down to that. So my bulletin went Queen, because she's British. Pope, because he isn't. Belly dancer. See what I'm saying here? Nigel is our next caller. Thank you for calling, Nigel, from Maidstone in Kent.
Oh, good evening, Tommy. How are you?
You're right. Surprisingly well.
Yeah, happy Christmas to you, I'd like to say. Happy Christmas
now,
to you.
I still say Merry Christmas, but apparently the organisations that are down on irresponsible drinking don't like us to say Merry Christmas anymore.
Oh.
But so you say happy.
I said happy, didn't I?
You did?
That's right.
And therefore you won't be arrested or...
Oh, dear. This is the worst Christmas for me because I just lost my mum 3 months ago before Christmas and I've never been on my own before. You know, it may sound, you know, silly or stupid, but I just don't like being on my own.
It's one of the worst...
Well...
One of the worst things at Christmas... brings us is memories of people who are not going to be with us.
I've got some good memories
for the first time,
obviously. I try not.
So, what have you done then? What was your Christmas day then, Nigel?
Well, I do go out cycling 20 miles a day, so I'm out for about 3 hours getting shopping and stuff, and also getting the fresh air. So I get quite tired because I cycle. So, and I'm 61 now, so. That does relieve a lot of stress, the exercise, I find.
Yes, you know? It does. It does. It's funny, isn't it? Because cycling actually can be very stressful.
Oh, well, the traffic is stressful, of course.
Exactly. Yeah,
yes. But I've sort of got used to that, really.
Yeah.
And I've got good lights.
Sorry, what's your mum's name?
It was Audrey. Audrey.
Still Audrey is Audrey, Ryan, Nigel. I always do this, but her name still is Audrey.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
No, what?
Well, I tend to think that, you know, if there are such things as ghosts, it is what lives on us, of us in other people.
You think she can hear us then?
Well, she's alive in a sense to you.
Mm. Well, I'm still talking to her in my house. And,
there you are.
I'm still talking to her. And I think she's guiding me to look after myself and keep the house tidy and cooking and whatever I do.
Well, just the two of you, was it?
Yes, it was just for 25 years after my dad died, you know, quite young.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, quite young my dad died. And, of course, I didn't want to leave her, even with, a girlfriend or anything. I'd rather look after her, which I did.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I've got a brother in Norwich who I've been speaking to on the phone over Christmas.
Has he got family?
Yes, grown-up children, my brother. Grown-up children with children, you see. So it's a big family, but none of them came to see me over Christmas, obviously. Mm. It's a long way from Norwich to my place.
You know what I say about you know what I'd say about Christmas, Nigel?
Yes.
No? Whilst it's around, I cannot resist it. Whilst there is Christmas, almost everything about it makes my heart sing.
Mm.
But you know, because of the pain that there is in Christmas for so many of us.
Yes, we're lost ones.
And there are other reasons. To be honest, if they got rid of it, I wouldn't miss it.
No. I was going to ask you, Tommy, you was in Magpie, the show, wasn't you, years ago?
Sorry, Nigel, I was just making a profound point there, and I'd rather not start to talk about
I agree with you.
I did on television on the back end of something that's reasonably sympathetic and profound.
Mm.
But yes, I did a programme called Magpie.
Yes, I didn't know whether it was the same it was you or not, because I've not asked you before, I don't think.
Who would it have been if it wasn't me, then?
I don't know. Who was the other person with the curly hair?
Mick Robertson.
Mick Robertson, was it? Yeah.
Yes.
And the lady was...
Jenny Hanley.
Jenny Hanley.
Was it not her?
The daughter of Jimmy Hanley.
No. Daughter of Dinah Sheridan.
Oh, right. And she was a singer, wasn't she? An actress?
Not really, although I did hear her singing in the shower once, but I wasn't in the same room as her at the time.
They were the good old days, weren't they, of the Magpie show?
She was only singing because she was weeing and she didn't want anybody to hear the sound of her wee. She wouldn't mind me telling you that because she's a fine, honest and open, decent person.
Dinah Sheridan.
That was her mum.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
A Hollywood actress.
I don't think she did any Hollywood, but she did Genevieve, which was a film about...
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, I remember that film.
There you are, you see.
That was a great film, wasn't it? All the old films.
I didn't rate it enormously, but it was a fine performance by Jenny's mum.
Yeah, I remember that. What's going to say? Anyway, I've been singing over Christmas on talk radio already, so I don't feel the need to sing tonight. I'd just like to ring up and have a chat with you tonight, anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Nigel.
So God bless you.
God bless you too.
Lovely to talk to you, Tommy.
Bye-bye, Nigel. Bye-bye. But I sound like Harry Corbett then. Now we're talking about old television programmes here now. It makes me feel old.
Oh.
That people start sort of trying to remember going way back. And to, you know, it wasn't black and white telly. It was a while ago, but they had colour, you know?
Somebody has found the Bill clip and tweeted the Bill
God,
clip.
No. Really?
Yeah, I know.
We can't play it. No, I'm telling you, we can't play it.
Oh, okay. Oh, we can't. I thought you meant you can't play it.
No, you can't play it. I was awful in it. But I was presenting a breakfast show on another radio station with Anne Diamond at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she's an interesting person who I came to like enormously, incredibly professional. Best interviewer, I think, I've ever come across in radio or television, Anne Diamond. Unbelievable interviewing skills. Her powers of listening. I've never seen anybody else who could listen so intently to somebody whilst at the same time having to think of the next question, wonder if they've got enough time for it, and so on and so forth. So I got completely sidetracked by my infatuation with Anne Diamond.
Yeah, glazed over.
Well, I think I'll stay with that, actually, because she really was a fine woman. And
well, she is.
I was making the bill whilst I was with presenting that programme with Anne, and it went out whilst we were doing the breakfast show together. And she told me in no uncertain terms that I was a good actor, which really reduced her in my eyes because I knew I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
And she was being kind.
Oh, she was being kind.
And I'd rather she'd said, my God, how'd you get away with that? I'd rather she said, how much did they pay you for that? You know, you weren't worth half of it. But she's a nice person, so she did. Anyway, enough about my strange past. Oh, no. Paul Squire. Thank you, Paul. Wonderful to hear Tommy Boyd on talk radio. Remember many of his late night shows on other stations. Yeah, you were talking about this earlier with me, Hayley. Being on the radio and what have you at night.
Yes.
Is a good time.
I love it. Yeah.
Because there's nothing else you can do.
Just have a chat.
Yes. Just be decent company for people,
yeah,
hopefully.
Lovely.
You know. And if people think that there might be a breaking news story somewhere. Nowadays, because everyone's got phones, they can make sure that nobody's shot the president or, you know...
They'll probably know before we do.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. So we can legitimately shoot the breeze. Now, other random facts. Do you want other random facts,
Miss like them.
Producer?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Would you be interested in some of the experiments I've been doing with text-to-speech?
Oh. Let's have one or two more facts and then we can do both.
More. One or two more
Why
facts.
Why not?
OK. Couples who marry... Are you married?
Yes.
When did you marry?
10 years ago now. Well, it'll be 10 years in August.
What month?
So 9 years, August. August the 28th.
You're laughing. Because statistics prove that couples who marry in January, February and March tend to have the highest divorce rates.
Oh.
Ah.
I wonder why that is.
Well, it could just be random, couldn't
it? Yeah, it could be.
Or there could be a reason. I can't see what that might be.
It's cold.
How long do you think it would take you to drive a car to the sun?
Well, you couldn't. There's no roads to it. So, I mean, that's a silly question, isn't it?
Well, Elon Musk sort of had a go at this kind of thing, didn't he? Didn't he put a car in space?
Yes.
Or was that a publicity stunt? Is he real, Elon Musk?
I think he's a real man.
Do you know who we're talking about? The person who...
Telstar.
And all sorts of other things?
Tesla.
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 Oh, I don't know.
And... submersibles and appalling tweets, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Man who apparently never sleeps.
Like Maggie Thatcher.
Well, she says she slept for 4 hours a day, a night.
I don't think you can function on that.
When I was 18, I decided that sleeping was a waste of time. I don't mind going to sleep, that's quite pleasant. And waking up, you know, the 10 minutes when you're kind of going, oh, is it
morning? A bit lucid.
Yeah. You know, Keats' waking sleepfulness. So I learned transcendental meditation because I was told that if you meditated, you needed a lot less sleep. But that didn't work.
Were you just sleeping when you were meditating, which is why you needed less sleep? I couldn't meditate.
I couldn't go under. I couldn't do it. I was too young. I don't think anybody can really meditate before the age of about 50.
Why do you think that?
Well, it's personal experience is one. Yeah. And two, because what you're actually doing is not switching off. You're kind of watching your thoughts go by and kind of going, bye-bye. Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Why are you thinking that? Oh, who cares?
So I've given it a go.
And?
Yeah, I think I'm... Yeah, I haven't been successful with it.
You haven't been able to meditate?
No.
It would take more than 150 years to drive a car to the sun. Who do you think gives bigger tips? Married men or unmarried men?
Unmarried men, definitely.
No!
Yes, because they're after, you know...
That's what I would have said, but official statistics... say otherwise.
Ooh.
What is the most hazardous season?
Well, which are the winter, four... ice.
No, summer.
Why?
I don't know. It just says statistics.
Why? I know why. Because it's really hard to drive when you've got the sun in your face. You can't see a thing.
Isn't low sun dangerous?
Exactly.
What do you do? You pull down the sun visor. That doesn't stop it. You put sunglasses on. That doesn't stop it. You wear anti-glare sunglasses and a know-all will tell you that's illegal. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
It's supposed to be illegal to wear anti-glare glasses at night. Anyway.
Is that because it bounces off?
I don't know.
You should know.
I don't know, but it's the kind of thing that some men know and they will tell you in the pub, don't they? Along with the fact that before they were a milkman... they were in the SAS.
Paul Ross will know. He knows everything.
Well, I thought you were going to say Paul Ross was in the SAS.
No, but he knows everything, so we'll ask him when he comes in.
That's a deal. And we look forward to that, and it's just round the corner. We rush now to Charlie, who's been kind enough to call the show. Charlie, you're on Talk Radio. Hello.
Good evening, Tommy. How are you?
I'm still surprisingly well, thank you. You?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Been listening to you for quite some time on different... places, locations, whatever. You've mellowed, haven't you?
Not really. Horses for courses. No. When I used to do the acerbic stuff, that was what was called for in the middle of the afternoon. I like late night radio because it's just a little bit more, well, you said it, mellow.
Yeah, but you just sort of, you're shooting the breeze now. It's just not the Tommy Boyd anymore.
No, well, you want me to be at you want me to be at people's throats, don't you?
No, far from it.
Well, what then?
Well, just to form opinions and things.
That's what I mean. Most of my opinions
challenge.
Most of the opinions that I formed, I put on the air deliberately, were ridiculous. That
really?
Was the whole point. Yeah, good grief, yes. That was the whole point.
No.
Yes. I didn't believe any of it. You didn't think I believed that, did you? Give every homeless person a free stray dog.
Right.
How could you possibly say that on the radio with a straight face? Of course it was meant to be satire.
I don't know. I don't know what to believe. I do. You were a person that kind of spoke from the heart and you said what you said, and I find it hard to believe that was just some sort of
wind-up. It was a wind-up.
Yeah, no.
It was a wind-up. I was looking for people who were daft enough to believe it.
They're the ones
I wanted to ring in. And the other 95% of people who knew it was a wind-up were looking forward to mugs coming up against me and trying to beat me in an argument that should have been so easy to win, but they couldn't. That was where the entertainment lay, if you can call it that.
Well, it was good fun, but nevertheless, right now, what are you doing now?
I know what you mean. I could be cynical and silly and say something like, I'm on the radio talking to you, Charlie, but I won't.
Yeah.
What am I doing now? I'm dividing my time between a whole range of responsibilities, professional interests outside broadcasting, which I shan't be talking about. And being a dad and a husband and a friend and a colleague to as many people as possible, including yourself. What are you doing now?
No, fair point. I mean...
No, go on. Just, what are you doing now?
Well, I'm phoning you, obviously, because... No,
that was the answer I deliberately pointed out is not the one that works. Because your question wasn't that. Your question was generally, so I'm asking you the same thing.
Hard at work, having brought up two children that are reasonably successful in life, sceptical about Brexit, etc. So, you know, just an everyday guy. Used to love your wonderful hair, by the way. Thought that was fantastic. It's just a shame that's not around anymore.
Hayley, over to you.
Oh, I love that. That's my favourite thing ever. Well, did you ever call up? What is your wonder? Pretend we're doing the wonderful hour now. What's your thing? What's your wonderful moment?
Probably the most common one, which is the fresh, clean sheets somehow. It was always, you know, it just summed up everything, really. You know, when you actually think of what is magical. Yeah.
And clean pyjamas,
too. It came up quite often.
Yeah. And mown grass, you know, the obvious ones are. Yeah, still...
mown grass was in the top five as well.
And I was saying to my next-door neighbour only the other day, he was talking about he had to creosote a fence where he works, and it wasn't creosote, and he was really disappointed because it was the
acrylic version as opposed to the oil-based,
And he said, I was looking forward to the smell of creosote.
I had one over Christmas. I was in all day on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day because people came to us to eat. And although I had the most lovely Christmas, when I stepped outside the front door on Boxing Day, fresh air was just absolutely wonderful.
Fresh air.
Good one when you're locked away for like 40 hours.
Yeah.
And when the heating's on as well, it's very stuffy inside. You don't realise it until you step outside.
Mm.
That's a good one. No, a good one.
Being able to go back
really, really, really good to talk to you.
Yeah, and you, Charlie. Cheers, mate. Being able to go back to sleep after you wake up a little bit early and you've got another half hour and you're able to go back to sleep.
Yeah. But do you do that thing if you wake up, say you're meant to wake up at 7:30 and you wake up at 7:26, do you still go back to sleep for that 4 minutes because you're like, I've got 4 minutes, I'm going to use it, I'm going to sleep?
Sometimes, yeah, but sometimes I also swing my feet out and come on, let's get on with it. I've got 4 spare minutes here, you know.
Yeah, that's a good one.
What's our number again? You've got me thinking about the wonderful hour.
Yes, I love that. Maybe we'll do that Friday. 0344 499 1000.
Yeah, and we're shooting the breeze because we're in the Winterlude.
Yes.
Or whatever the other words. Winterfall.
Twixfall. Was it? Twixmas.
There is stuff happening in the world and there is news, and the next news bulletin will be at 1 o'clock and we'll bring you up to date with anything. And obviously we drop into the show anything that was breaking that was of sufficient for us to need to bring it to you. Otherwise, if you're snuggled up on your own and it's on your phone and your headphones, good evening to you. Or if you're in the living room and whatever, it's probably just yourself, but it might be one or two of you, in which case, hi. I'll tell you about a couple who phoned me once on a phone-in programme, and it took me about 2 or 3 minutes to realise why it was so easy for them to pass the phone from one to the other and then back to the other and then back to the other, and what they were up to. After this.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Hayley was just showing me a clip from an episode of The Bill that somebody mentioned on this show about an hour ago, and because technology is what it is nowadays, a listener was able to tweet Hayley a link of the clip, and she just played it to me. I'm having trouble keeping up a little bit now, but, you know, I'm nearer 70 than 60, and not bad on it, but on the other hand, I am still nearer 70 than 60. I've got this from Roger, who tweets, I remember putting you on for my mum when she was sunbathing one summer. She'd never heard you before. After the show, I went outside to see what she thought, and she was furious. I laughed so hard while I explained that the whole show was a wind-up. Yeah, it's interesting, Roger. That bears up what I was saying to Charlie, who said he was disappointed that I am no longer, apparently, the acerbic radio host that I used to be. But I explained to Charlie two things. One was that late night radio, you don't really want people shouting at each other too much on late night radio. It's got its place, but as a, you know, sort of central format, no. And what I did in the afternoon back in those days on the old talk radio was a wind up at the things that I was suggesting. I'm just trying to think of an example. For example, one day I started the show by saying, I went to the hole in the wall on the way here one day, and I found out that I had £2,000 in my bank balance more than I expected. So I went straight out and bought a jet ski, and they're fantastic. Okay, now there's so many elements in saying that that's going to irritate an awful lot of people. First of all, the fact that some bloke on the radio is £2,000 richer in his current account than he thought he was. That's going to annoy an awful lot of people. Secondly, of course, most people think that jet skis are horrendous, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, the racket, the pollution.
And where do you store it?
I don't know. Well, you tend to see them on the backs of motorhomes.
Ah, oh, yes.
But the noise, you know, you're lying on the beach and it's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, not bad. Let me try the difference between that and a speedboat. Okay, so
can you do a speedboat? Hang on, we need to hear it.
All men can
do
speedboats.
Come on.
Hold on. I've got to do well now, haven't I? That's it bouncing over the waves.
Brilliant.
Was that all right?
Yeah, really good. More than all
bad,
right.
Was it?
No, more than all right.
I'm trying to think if I can do any other machines. Can you do anything, Sam? Can you do any machines? Trim phones? A lot of men can do trim phones.
What's a trim phone?
I was going to ask that, but I didn't want to be silly.
Well, it's a phone that makes a noise like trim. It goes brim, 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 that sort of thing.
It's the one I always thought I can do a sprinkler. Like the old...
Go on, then.
That's good.
Oh, that is good.
That is pretty damn good. Right, we've got all the sound effects now. What we need now is some actors and a script that contains a speedboat,
yes,
a jet ski, and a sprinkler.
We could make the Archers, couldn't we?
Yeah, but except we won't be paying any money for SFX.
Homegrown.
Sound effects. Yeah. You knew that. Right, what else can you do, Sam? Is that it? Sprinkler?
That's all I can think of at the top of my head.
Okay, if I think that I got anything... else I can do.
Can you do motorbike starting up like vroom?
Go on then.
Vroom. That's all I can do, really. No.
I worked in a place once that had a canteen, and it had a really annoying tannoy. And you'd be in the canteen eating your beans on toast, and it would go bim boom. And then you'd get this echoey announcement. It would go, Glenn Edwards, please phone extension 417. Like that. So I was sitting next to this bloke one day and the canteen was heaving. And I don't know what made me do it, but I just went, his name was David McKellar. And I just went, bim, boom. Well, David McKellar, please contact extension 177. And he got up and went and did it. It wasn't that good an impression. And as you could see, I wasn't able to accomplish the echo.
No, yeah.
That, not even Jim Carrey surely could do that. But point was, I got away with it.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about putting together a piece of drama in which the sound effects, radio drama, in which the sound effects are done by the by human voice.
Yes.
So we've got a speedboat and a sprinkler. If anybody else can do any machine noises or sound effects of any sort, I mean, a wind's quite easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on, you do the wind.
Shh.
It's terrible.
I can't do it without laughing.
Sam, show her a proper wind.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We've got wind. Can anybody do thunder? No. Jamie said, I was just nodding off and I had a brilliant idea, a real light bulb moment. How about giving every homeless person a stray dog? It... just came out of the blue. What do you do about that? You could put it out there. That's Jamie. Thank you for that.
Nice thought.
And Anonymous... No, Paul says, Talk. My favourite of your old talk radio wind-up topics was when you came on one day and did a whole hour on the subject... No, I didn't say that. Did I? Can I say that word? It begins with T and it's got SS in the middle and TOT on the end of it.
Yeah, okay. This time of night.
I think so.
If not, Sam, press the button.
Don't press the button, Sam, because I'm just reading out what somebody has tweeted. Have you... My favourite of your old Talk Radio wind-up topics was when you came on one day and did a whole hour on the subject, have you ever met a Malcolm who wasn't a tosspot? Happy days, but that was then. Still very much enjoying what you're doing now. That's from Paul. Yes, I think I might have done that one. And, you know, that... I don't think you could do it nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, like there are certain jokes that comedians can't tell anymore?
I think we've got too much... I think we're a bit more... I don't want to make this sound patronising in any way, but I think we're a bit more intelligent now, aren't we? We cotton on to things quicker, don't we? Which is why it's harder to get wound up.
Well, I don't know. Because of the joy of self-righteous indignation, you see, I've worked for newspapers who make it clear to their writers that what their readers most want to experience when they're reading that newspaper is self-righteous indignation. Oh, my goodness me! Have you read this? This they enjoy it. And we do, don't we? We like catching people out. Got him.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
said that and he shouldn't have said it. Oh, did he say that? I think he did. He might have done. Now we've got him. We'll get in the sack. That's what people enjoy doing. Mm. And that was, again, you know, that was the kind of the basis of it. Do people still feel like that? I think they do.
Definitely. It's human nature.
We all want to get people, yeah. don't we?
Well, we want to win. It's competitive.
We want to catch people out.
Yeah.
Now I've got you, you son of a bitch. That's a game, a psychological game that was that was identified that we all play by a psychiatrist called Eric Byrne. Now I've got you, you son of a bitch. It's where you get somebody and you really get them because you've got them. They're wrong. They're in the wrong. They've done something wrong. And you really make sure that they suffer for it, you know. And it happens in offices, happens in schools. You know, when a teacher who isn't quite up to pace spots a child, a pupil, and they've done something wrong, whoa, that teacher will make sure that that child, pupil, knows it, that they've been spotted. Mm. Now I've got you. And that was what the tightrope that we were walking with that particular format, because I was crossing the line most days. Which is why at one point the Radio Authority had an office in the Brompton Road in London where six people worked 5 days a week just dealing with complaints to my show.
Brilliant.
Which was, you know, quite a credential. Proud of that. Missing Ian Lee, says Will Benson, but Tommy Boyd is a fine substitute. Spent many a night listening to the Human Zoo back in the day. Yes. I've had requests to do The Wonderful Hour and The Human Zoo again, but I'm not going to do it because you want to go forward, don't you?
Yeah.
Doesn't one? Rather than back? So we've been talking about a number of things this evening on the programme, which were sort of topics, really, proper topics. One of them that we ought to breathe a little life into, I think, Hayley, is there anything that you are good at that you would like to be not so good at?
Oh, see, I'm so self-critical. I can think of lots of things that I'd like to be better at. Gosh. I talk too much. So I wish my brain didn't connect to my mouth as quickly as it does.
Aha. Okay.
There's one.
Well, I think that's a credential.
Okay.
I like people to have an open highway between the brain and the mouth. I don't like people who are guarded. People who think before they speak.
Yeah, I definitely don't do that.
People who've got another agenda. But you ask them if they are happy with your show, and they say, yes, thought it was quite good. Yeah, uh-oh. You know what I'm saying?
What do they really mean?
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let's rush to Stephen, who's been kind enough to call the show. Stephen, thanks for calling Talk Radio.
Tommy, I just tuned into you and I've been listening for a long, long time just by accident. Gone dark. I remember years and years ago you said, let's move Edinburgh, the property, the capital city of Scotland, to Norwich, and it caused such a fuss.
Yes.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
That's brilliant.
I remember you suggest once, if you suggest these things on the radio, because it's on the radio, people think you must be meaning it. And I suggested
that it was...
What was the reason I gave, if you remember? What was the rationale behind moving Edinburgh to Norwich?
I don't know, but it was very good. You had a lot of Scottish people ringing up. complaining, and I mean, they took it all in, and it was brilliant. You don't get that anymore.
No.
It was very funny. It was light-hearted. There was, you know, it was absolutely brilliant. It's a shame you don't have your own TV show at 7 o'clock prime time.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'd be up against the one show that's so good, so good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, what you're doing now, it's brilliant. But like I say,
Now that you've got me thinking about it, I enjoyed Let's Give Yorkshire to the Cherokees.
Yeah, yeah. It was absolutely brilliant.
I know. And I was rhapsodising about, you know, our Mrs. Ramsbottom's scalp hanging from the wigwam.
Yeah, it was. Yes. We said
my Cherokee name would be Dances with Whippets.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Then you did one like telling you that.
Sorry, got me going now. Dances with Whippets, yeah. That were funny.
Yeah, then like,
Dances with Whippets. I don't think it's anything quite as indulgent as laughing at yourself.
Oh, come on, yeah.
Well, it took me 20 years to get the joke, because I had to do it straight-faced. You know,
you do it
absolutely straight. You know, yeah. Why don't we give Yorkshire to the Cherokees?
Yeah, yeah. People take it in, but fair play.
But they wanted to be. People want to be slightly offended and, you know, feel that indignation that I was talking about earlier. But thank you for the memory. Yeah. You actually gave us all a laugh.
You're asking certain ladies to take certain articles of clothing off, and they went and done it, and put it on radio.
Well, now, that was a very risque feature.
Yeah.
For a period of about 6 weeks, once a week, I would pose as a Lothario.
Yeah.
And I would... Oh, God, you just couldn't do this anymore, you see, for so many good reasons. And I would say, if anybody would like me to entertain them this afternoon, please call in. And people did, in their droves. And I would sort of, you know, be romantic with them. Nothing suggestive or naughty. I don't remember asking anybody to take their clothes off, Stephen, if you don't mind.
No, I can remember it was like when you take certain clothing off, which we will not mention.
I don't remember that.
I can. I've got a very good memory, like an elephant.
Yeah, but the thing is, I might have got away with it then. I'm not saying I did, but I might have done. But I certainly wouldn't today, and quite right too.
Oh no, It's only a bit of fun and everything, and it is very, very good.
I know, but we move forward, don't we? And some things that were. See, there's something I think here, Stephen. You know, I'm old enough to remember a TV programme called The Black and White Minstrel Show.
Yes, I can. Lenny Henry was in it once.
It was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course it was.
But we didn't think that at the time.
No.
We kind of thought it was just a bit of fun.
Of fun, yeah.
Now, there's lots of people nowadays who will quite rightly decry that and plenty of other things.
Oh, of course so, yeah.
And I'm with them. I'm with them. But here's my question to them and me. What is it that we're doing now that we think is kind of okay and just a bit of fun, which in just 10 years' time, they'll be folding their arms and going, what were they thinking? And none of us know what that is. Not you don't, not the Radio Authority, the BBC, NBC, CBS, the Washington Post. Nobody knows what that is. I have a feeling one of the things that we'll stop doing, and we'll go, my God, how did they do that only 10 years ago, is factory farming and industrial abattoirs.
Yeah.
And disguising meat by putting it under plastic and making it look not like what it is, which is once a living animal. I eat meat myself, so I'm not, you know, not campaigning here, but I'm saying that, and also the treatment of children, because children don't have a spokesperson. They got, you know, there's like a children's czar and Floella Benjamin.
Yeah.
But they haven't got a child who's in the public eye, who's in the House of Lords.
No.
Who says it how it is.
Yeah, yeah. You ought to use this as a topic, but you get people to ring in because Well, you're saying it's true. I mean, black and white minstrel, you can't do that these days, this day and age, which is fair play. You can't. Things have moved on.
Yeah,
it's like cockfighting and whatever.
Bear baiting. You're absolutely right. You know, that. If we hadn't moved forward, we would still have bear baiting.
Yep.
And calling it entertainment.
Yep. So things are progressing and moving on, and things. It's like I said, that was long years ago, but people didn't know any better, but they do now.
Stephen, you've done well because you made us laugh and you made us think. That's not bad going.
Yeah, but like I said, I can remember them days and they were absolutely fantastic, and I'll give you 10 out of 10. And like I say, it's a shame you've not got your own show on TV, doing topics like we used to years ago, you know, like wine to Edinburgh and Norwich, and you get certain Scotch people ringing up. And it was all tongue-in-cheek, but it was a bit of fun. What's wrong with a bit of fun?
Stephen, so thank you. Appreciate it, mate. What's wrong with it? Nostalgia's not what it used to be, is it, though?
No.
There's that as well. We'll crash on. We've only got 20 minutes. No, 10 minutes, I suppose, now, before Paul Ross. And I haven't spoken to Paul, seen Paul, talked to Paul for nearly a year now, so I'm looking forward to it. Is he still as non-stop?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So I'm really not sure about this next 10 minutes. So if it doesn't work for you, I'll see you in the morning. Good night.
Is that me included?
No, not you. So what I was doing was I was getting very interested in artificial communication. You know that artificial intelligence is being talked about a lot nowadays. Well, I was contacted by somebody I've known for a long time, who's based in California. I met him through American Talk Radio about 20 years ago, and we stayed in touch on and off. And he called me up and he said he'd just been asked to do some advising with a big tech company. I think they're called something like TexTex, which is their Texan-based technical company, but they're now in California. And they're working on artificial intelligence. And because he used to work in talk radio, they've hired him and other people to help provide them with artificial communication, right? Which is slightly different from artificial intelligence. It's a sort of a subpart of artificial intelligence. And what they wanted to achieve was a listening device that was able to understand human intonation, right?
Mm.
Now, I've been out there once, and we've been communicating a lot using technology. And we are getting closer to the possibility that a machine might be able to tell the difference between somebody saying, "Good morning, Hayley," compared to somebody saying, "Good morning, Hayley," and respond appropriately.
Yes.
So that they can actually tell from the mellifluousness and the length of the words and the intonation what the hidden meaning is in communication.
Mm.
Because the machines that we've got at the moment, Google and Alexa, is it? And Echo, they can't, can they?
No.
They hear good morning and they come back, good morning.
And then if you ask a question that they don't understand, they go, sorry, I don't understand that.
Correct. Now, I don't know if you can just fade up my laptop for a second, Sam. I don't know.
92. This is a
clip from probably the first film that ever explored really artificial communication, which is 2001 A Space Odyssey. And in it, the spaceman who's on his way to Jupiter has to disconnect the computer, who's called Hal, because it's sabotaging the mission.
Take a stress pill and think things.
So the voice is that of the computer. And the heavy breathing is the spaceman.
I know I've made some very poor decisions recently. But I can give you my complete assurance that my work will be back to normal.
Yeah, okay, so it's... Then he dismantles the machine and it starts to sing, and it sings Daisy. Hold on, I'll just see if I can find it. Here we go.
Daisy.
It's quite a famous bit of movie thing.
Daisy. Daisy. Give me your answer to.
The computer's gradually being dismantled.
Crazy. All for the love of you.
It's very poignant, actually.
It won't be a style.
Anyway, that's what Stanley Kubrick can do, but nobody else can. All right. So I found myself mucking around with speech to text to see what kind of intonation we could get out of something else. So I thought, supposing they made 2001 again, they wouldn't sing Daisy, would they?
No.
Because it's too out of date. So I ran through an artificial communication system a song that the computer might sing if it was dying, right, in the year 2018, right? And I played it to my 8-year-old nephew, who's a Queen fan, right? I played it 3 or 4 times, and he ended up helpless on the floor with laughter each time. Shall I play it?
I see a little silhouette of a man. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me. Galileo, Galileo. Galileo, Galileo. Galileo Figaro, a magnifico. But I'm just a poor boy and nobody loves me. He's just a poor boy from a poor family.
All right, that's enough of that. I think the point is that they made that film around about 1968, I think, 2001. And they thought in 1968 that by 2001, we'd be A, able to fly to Jupiter, and B, that we'd have computers that could engage in such real human communication. Yeah. And the fact is that we're 20 years on from that now, and this is the best we can do.
Spare him his life from this monstrosity. Easy come, easy go, will you let me go? Bismillah. No, we will not let you go.
No, that's enough of that.
Hasn't quite got the same ring to it, has it, really?
Well, we're not very good at predicting the future is the point, I suppose. Yeah. If there is a point, it doesn't have to be a point, but if there is a point, it's supposed to be a point, it's radio. That's the peg. Right? We can't predict the future. Because didn't they... didn't Back to the Future, the second Back to the Future, wasn't it set in 2018 or something, 2017?
15, I think it was.
2015.
Yeah.
And how close did they come?
Not in the slightest bit.
Nowhere near. Nobody had a phone.
No.
All that they had that suggested that technology had moved forward were skateboards without wheels.
They had the deep, like, hydration meal stuff, like you put a pill into a microwave and it suddenly hydrates and you've got a pizza.
Oh, and wasn't there some product placement for Nike?
Yes.
What was that again?
It was his shoes.
Self-lacing trainers.
Self-lacing shoes.
My shoes! Exactly that. Look.
Well,
they don't look. They just slip on, but they've got laces that they just do up themselves.
Tracy has one leg.
Tracy, who's Tracy?
Tracy. Wow, I'm really suffering from fact blindness.
You're tired, aren't you?
I'm really suffering from fact blindness. And also, it shows how distracting it is when you hoik one leg onto a table, by the way.
That's what it was, wasn't it?
I'm going to blame that. I think I got away with that one. He got away with that one, didn't he? He's been sleeping in the knife drawer, that boy. Right, so just to wind up, I'll give you 3 more statistics. The safest age of life is... At what age are you least likely to, I presume, die? It's a good question, isn't it?
I'd say middly at 55.
55, Sam?
I'd go, like, 2021.
2021. Listener, your turn. Yes, you're right. 10.
10?
That's what I just said. Let's try that again. Hello, Tommy.
Sorry, aren't you
aren't
William?
Aren't you fantastic?
Who are you?
Sorry?
William.
No, you call me Tracy.
Okay, you can be Tracy.
Shall I tell you where Tracy comes from? Hang on a second.
Wolverhampton, I don't know.
No. Tracy comes from the speech-to-text device... No, text-to-speech. Oh, no, I can't be bothered with this. I'll go back to where
come
I was
in,
before.
Come in.
Paul, here's Paul Ross, which is probably just as well, because This show's dragged on so long, Paul, that
I've been a great listen, as ever, with you, Tom, and I've missed you, mate.
I've missed you too, Paul, and the show's dragged on so much, I'm now starting to make up names for my colleagues. This, for example, is Tracy.
This is Kaylee.
She's no longer Hayley. Yeah, and the guy next door is also Tracy.
Mind you, she has the look of a Tracy, and so does he. He's like a Thunderbird puppet, old Sam.
You're not wrong. She is a bit Tracy-ish.
Lovely song by the Cufflinks from the 60s. Tracy, when I'm with you.
If you weren't Paul, yeah. What do you think people would think you were?
I think I'd be Turk Thrust.
I was going to say that.
My real first name's John, though.
Is it?
Oddly, my dad, I've told this story before, but my dad was John Ross, and he had no middle name because he was illegitimate, never knew his own father. And I was born in 56, in the year when men went down and registered the name. So he came back to my mum, who was only 17. I was born on my dad's 18th birthday, New Year's Eve, and I've called him John. And my mum said, I'm not having two Johns in the house, too confusing.
Yes.
So my second name was Paul. I was only ever called Paul. My next brother, dad registered, he's called Simon John Ross.
Right.
My dad's thinking, no, he's Simon. Finally, he came up with Jonathan Stephen Ross, and he's the only one in the family who's only ever called Jonathan John. The rest of us called him Jonathan. But so he finally got it. So three of us have got John in our names. Talk about an ego.
Well, you can reuse birthday cards and stuff, though.
Well, only
for
the second. I mean, I'm Paul, there's Simon, and then there's finally Jonathan, or my dad used to call him John, and now John. All right, John?
John.
By the way, I'm going to be watching 2001 this weekend after you played that clip. That is such a great film.
But what was it about?
Well, I think it's about the next stage of our evolution, because the monolith is there to guide us away from the apes, to teach us about tools.
That's brilliant.
And the next thing is the Star Child is born, and I think he's wiping out those kind of collecting satellites. So I think he's going to wipe out human beings, because we've lived our time, and I think he's taking over. But the scene I love is, and you might remember, it's absolutely chilling, is Hal, and of course Hal's initials are all one before IBM, which is brilliant. They're in the pod, okay, to try and talk, because they know Hal's eavesdropping.
Oh, yeah.
There's a very creepy shot, and there's Frank Paul and Dave Bowman, okay, talking, and they're plotting how to decommission Hal, okay? And the camera creeps in, and creeps in, and creeps in, and you suddenly realise Hal can't only hear, he can read their lips. Yeah. And it's such a chilling moment of cinema, that. It's a brilliant film, that is.
It is. But wasn't it odd seeing Leonard Rossiter?
Yes.
Miss Jones.
Decommission the monolith, Miss Jones.
13 minutes late. Cow on the line at Surbiton.
It's like he's in the room. Reggie Perrin.
I'll tell you what we're doing. We're putting together the possibility of doing a piece of radio drama in which all of the sound effects are done by human voice. So Sam does a mean sprinkler.
All right.
Do it again, Sam. Just...
I do quite a good...
What?
That's the tune. That's popcorn by Hot Butter from years ago.
I'll tell you what, I bet you can
do. So I
could
be on the radio.
Yes,
I can do this as well, like a horse's...
Oh, I see.
Horse goes down the road.
It sounds like the one I backed this afternoon.
Unplunging a blocked up sink.
Go on.
Oh,
yes.
You can stay.
For the next 5 hours, certainly.
Since you can do the popcorn, can you also do the wine bottle opening?
Is it kind of...
It goes... Now you go...
Oh, yeah. That.
And then you go...
Oh, that's very... I can go...
Just pat your cheeks and go... Yeah, that's lovely. Oh, makes me feel what?
It's 1 o'clock somewhere.
Right, so we've got a sprinkler, a speedboat, because all men can do speedboats, can't they? I was saying.
I can do Formula One.
Go on. Yeah. Okay, hold on a second. Do that again. Do it three times, right?
There goes
Proust! There goes Dickens! It's my bad Murray Walker. But you can't...
We've got a franchise here, Tommy.
We've got something, but it may need another meeting.
Now, if memory serves, can't you do a very good impersonation of a dolphin?
Yes, I can.
So that would be useful, wouldn't it?
That would.
Because the dolphin could be creeping to get under the sprinkler or something, or to avoid the Formula One race cars.
Now, how do you know that?
I'll tell you how I know that.
Go on.
Many years ago, I was a judge on the panel of Through the Keyhole, and it was your keyhole we went through, and I guessed it. And I remember you spoke about one of the artifacts on show for David Frost and Lloyd Grossman was something to do with your time swimming with the dolphins.
I had a little dolphin statue.
Was, and you told the story brilliantly to Sir David, of course, as you did. And I remember you did a really convincing kind of dolphin, which stunned the audience. Get down, Flipper!
No, well, I trained them, and I'm ashamed of it. But if I hadn't done it, somebody else would have done it, and done it without the care that I did it. But there was one dolphin there called Belle, and she used to talk to me, and I used to talk back to her. I have no idea exactly what we were saying, but she was trying to communicate with me. So are they bright? They are brighter than chimps.
I think
they're not as bright as you.
I think her real name was Tracy, wasn't it?
Tracy. Well done. You're nothing if not tidy, Paul Ross. I don't know. So you are going to be going through the newspapers, the
bit of the
news agenda of the day?
We've got a brilliant chat with Van Connor, I hope, coming up. We're going to be looking at 10 big films for the first 3 months of 2019, including the first clip you'll like to hear from the new Avengers film, if that floats your boat, a Hellboy reboot and the Lego Movie 2. And we're talking to a remarkable woman, a fascinating story. As you know, I'm sure, the Korean War ceasefire's kicked in. It's never ended officially 65 years ago this year, July 53. And there were 1,000 British servicemen died. Okay, the casualty rate was astonishing. Over 500,000 people on both sides died. 1,000 British servicemen, 300 of their bodies have never been found or identified. We're going to be hearing from a forensic archaeologist, a wonderful woman, who since Trump went to see Kim Jong-un, they've been returning remains. Yeah. The question they've got is identifying them. And so she's been going to family members, and she wants your help with this, folks. If you've lost somebody and their body was never identified, all they need from you is a DNA swab, and they can probably now identify people's loved ones and put people to rest. So it's going to be a great story, that, I think. Remarkable story.
Brilliant, Paul. Lovely to see you again. Be listening. Thank you.